Bob Choi, Ivan. I am so fucking lonely on the social media.
No, you're not. Everybody touches your dick.
No, nobody loves me. Where do I find some love on social media?
Everybody loves you. And everybody loves going to facebook.com/nerdfunnel, youtube.com/nerdfunnel, or our website at nerdfunnel.com to spread the love around.
What if I want to show pictures of myself?
I go to Pornhub.
Oi.
That's awkward.
I want to show pictures of myself, and I want to see pictures of other people. What is the best way to find NerdFunnel?
Oh, you can
Pornhub
find
Nerdfunnel.com.
And Instagram. You can search us on Instagram for NerdFunnel, and you can also tweet us at NerdFunnel. But until you can do all that, why don't you listen to us?
Or go on to Pornhub.com.
Or listen to us while watching porn.
There's no better way to maintain your erection than listening to NerdFunnel.
Hey everyone, we're back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel. I'm Bob Shui, and with me tonight is Ivan.
Spoiler alert, we have not actually left this room.
Yeah, we've been here all week. And Steven.
Let's Marvin Gaye and get it on.
Yeah, funneling all the nerd news of the world into your more than willing ear holes. So, this evening, we are sitting back and going to get a little bit misty in here tonight. We're going to make it a little misty in here tonight.
A little steamy.
A little delayed action romance topic, romance in the nerdyverse. We're a little bit behind from Valentine's Day.
It's still February, so.
It's still February. I think it still counts. We're at the tail end of February. I think we're going to make it okay. So we're talking about romance in video games, romance in TV, how it's progressed, how it's evolved as a dialogue between males and females, males and males, females and females. How it went from... Sorry, but the princess is another castle, 7 out of 8 times, to...
Heavy Rain.
Was it Heavy Rain? Is that the name of that?
No. Heavy Rain was the one
about... That was the
kid,
the
guy whose son
the origami killed. Killer, yeah. That was David Cage.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
There's a lot of romance in that one, right?
Was there?
David Cage? There was some loving. There was some...
I'm talking about the part where she...
There was
spoiler alert.
There was QTE makeout scenes, right?
Yeah, there was. And then there was the vaguely rapey kind of scene, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's what I was referring to.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
And then there was the shower scene.
David Cage does not... Okay. We'll start with David Cage. I got some issues
with
David.
The most romantic.
I got some issues with David Cage. I like... If you look at his... If you played his catalog...
Indigo Prophecy. Indigo Prophecy was fun.
Heavy Rain. What was the one with Ellen Page?
Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah.
I actually like Beyond Two Souls.
It was okay. I was just like... I feel like his games are more like movies you just press buttons to. Yeah.
So double bag at Nerd Fellers. The show starts now.
I like a fucking David Cage game overall. I mean, I think that it's not super heavy on gameplay, but they deliver like interesting and fun experiences to me.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the gameplay. It's not about those games aren't about gameplay. It's about David Cage trying to make cool movies, and then you just press buttons to them.
Right. Interactive.
That
movies.
Sounds so familiar to me.
Yeah.
Who else does that?
Well, I mean, lots of game players do, but I think as far as... Okay, speaking of romance...
Are we talking about a certain bespectacle?
Hideo Kojima, perhaps?
A bespectacle?
No, there's gameplay in Metal Gear Solid, for sure. I mean, that's some tight gameplay. That's some...
Yeah,
Metal Gear Solid is definitely
more of a game than the David Cage games.
Really? I mean,
I've actually never played any of them.
Really?
True story.
Okay, LP. I think you'll really like Heavy Rain. Yeah, LP.
I think you'll enjoy it. It's the story's real dark, and it falls apart kind of right at the end.
Yeah.
But like, how
many of these like really promising games that have like that are like super cinematic, has like a really great concept, is able to hold up
the whole way? Very few.
I mean,
if it goes 90% of the way, it's great to me. Like
that's what she said.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of romance, David Cage has a complete Ellen Page fetish. Did you realize this? He was like on. He has like this weird creepy, like stalkerish thing for Ellen Page. He was trying to get like get her for a year.
Who doesn't really?
Okay. I'll admit. Did you ever see Hard Candy?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first saw Hard Candy and
Juno.
That
was a brilliant movie.
That was the movie that you were into Ellen Page for?
Hard Candy?
Yeah.
Well, she was just so visceral in that movie. It was like, dude, I'm afraid. I've got a fear boner. Like, like I'm
Damn
afraid
it,
and was, aroused.
You stole the boner right out of my mouth.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Sidebar.
I'll put it back in.
Please.
And then take it out again and then put it back in.
Yeah.
And then take it out again.
Sidebar?
Put it back in.
Sidebar. Who did a better Ellen Page, Beyond Two Souls,
or The Last of Us.
The Last of Us.
Ellie, I think Ellie did it.
Ellen
Page should have been Ellie. I think they should have.
No,
she should have gone with that project.
No. Ashley Johnson did an awesome
job. I'm not saying she did a bad job.
I feel like she brought a different quality to it than Ellen Page would have brought to it.
And like, speaking of like romance and partnerships.
Go ahead. It was like a note for note Ellen Page impression, though.
Yeah,
I feel like that was some of the.
I mean, if she hadn't looked like Ellen Page, do you think it would have been note for note? Like,
I feel like that played.
If she had been like a taller, skinnier, blonde chick, but with just the same character, like,
right.
Would you have think it would be Ellen Page, or was it more just because she looked like Ellen Page?
I think it was mannerisms. Well, yeah. it was definitely.
But then that has more to do with like the animation and character design, like the art design of the game, than it does like the actual. Because like, she was. Of potty mouth kid.
Yeah.
Like that's about the only thing that you could ascribe to Ashley Johnson's performance,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Okay. Speaking of romance and relationships in that game. So remember that they had that, DLC content where
she's gay.
She had that, that kind of lesbian
Spoilers.
Interaction.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
I
mean, so before she meets Joel, she's survived. Was it Boston? I forgot where
right,
she was.
Right. That's how she got, found out she was immune.
Yeah, she found out she was immune because her.
They both get bit.
They both get that fungus.
Right. Mm-hmm. I actually liked that DLC was all story, basically.
Yeah,
like,
it was all story.
There was no fighting or anything. It was just like, go and experience what happened to this girl first.
That was pretty cool. And I think
the photo booth was great.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I think, well, I mean, if we're talking about relationships in general,
mm-hmm.
that was an excellent, excellent example of how complex and deep. You know, it goes beyond just the romantic. It's the exploration of the familial kind of relationship that Joel develops for
mm-hmm.
Ellie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, the mother, the father, daughter, the
yeah.
replacement. Well, I like how,
and that's a deep and rich.
You're talking about in the actual game,
in the actual game.
In the game proper,
and it's different from, you know, falling in love with someone,
right.
which is
yeah.
fairly easy to access, whereas opposed to being able to justify dooming the entire race of humans, or basically to having to deal with this. This outbreak for the rest of their lives.
We don't actually know, though, that they would have found a cure.
We don't know that, but there was the chance.
But he's
he
just not
just
willing
like,
to sacrifice.
Yeah.
Not willing to.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes him a villain necessarily.
No, that makes him a very real parent.
Right. Yeah.
And that's I think that's what the beauty of that game was, is that complexity of that relationship, because no one really understands what it's like to be a parent
mm-hmm.
until they are one.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea. I have no idea.
And even if you are a parent, like, you have to sometimes people don't even like step up to being parents until they face some really hard decisions with their kid.
Right.
It's like, you know, when it comes to that, but
even
lay that
when,
down.
Yeah, exactly. Even when they're a parent, they still are kind of shitty and like selfish assholes
until something real happens.
Even then,
some of them don't step up.
They don't.
Yeah. But I liked how with the DLC with Ellie, I liked how like that connection between them, it wasn't like categorized. Like when in the main game, like Joel had categorized of like, well, I have, you know, I have my daughter and then
right.
now I have my new daughter and then I have, you know, I lost all these people. And like all his relationship seems categorized. He's trying to like place everybody in roles.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Ellie, it was just kind of like this organic development. It didn't matter that she was, African-American girl. It didn't matter that she was another girl. It was just
right.
this organic evolving love between two human beings.
Right.
It didn't matter what category they fell under.
Oh, one of the best moments in all of gaming for me is when Ellie kisses her friend And she, like, just in the heat of the moment where they're just super excited, and she kisses her.
Yeah.
And then she backs off real quick, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then the girl just goes, for why? What?
Yeah.
And it was just like, it's like such a human, really yeah. beautiful moment.
It's like, no, we're people. It's right. like, it doesn't matter that we're...
Right, and I love you. And
skinned with female, you know, trappings on the outside. We're just people.
Right, and it was all...
Especially that becomes... That essence of humanity, I think, becomes more apparent when you're faced with an apocalyptic situation. It's like, well... You know, because society is falling apart, all those little trappings, all those categories kind of fall away. And it's like, right. what do we still need to keep to be human?
Right. I find it interesting that, like, in a lot of these apocalypse situations or scenarios that we see in a lot of media, there's always kind of a love story involved. And I wonder how much of that is us just playing towards, like, an audience of like, oh, there has to be a romance in this because
mm-hmm. yeah, because that's yeah
we need a female audience or whatever they're trying to
how much of it's demographic targeting and right. like how much
but
of it, yeah.
on the other side is like how much of that is a commentary on us as people of like we'll always find a way to overcome or there's can romance bloom on a battlefield
yeah like, well, if Mars was here tonight he would be like he would what was that the ocelot and Big Boss line on the battlefield with like the love blooms on the battlefield.
Otacon.
Yeah. Otacon. Sorry.
I came this far to ask you. Do you think love can even bloom on a battlefield?
Sorry, it wouldn't be Nerd Funnel without an MGS reference.
Apparently, this is like
our thing now. God, Hideo,
this has become
God
one bless. Of
the Hideo Kojima needs to be paying us royalties now.
Such a bad bit. Like this is like my least favorite bit on this show, and yet I pay homage to it every single time.
No, but like
you did this to us.
You did this. But I think that when the chips are down, like you're saying, like in post-apocalyptic like games and movies and things like that, people will you know do. Is it in our nature to kind of hunt down something to love? Like, is that what saves us in the end? Like, do we give in to the loneliness of the apocalypse, or do we try to latch on to something and somebody?
Well, I mean, The Walking Dead is an example where we kind of see a lot of burgeoning relationships throughout the course of the show. Some of them are more successful than others.
But, oh, yeah.
And what I kind of like about the show, from what it seems like, is that nobody really breaks up or divorces in the apocalypse.
They just get eaten.
Yeah, you just die. So, yeah. like, you're kind of with that person till death do you part, which is yeah. kind of a very nice sentiment. Or... someone breaks up with you in the apocalypse, like what happened to spoiler Shane.
Yeah.
And then you go nuts. So, because, I mean, getting rejected in the real world fucking sucks. But when you're like at the end of humanity,
yeah,
and you get rejected by a chick, worst fucking day.
It's like,
ever.
Well, I'd rather face zombies on my own than face them with you.
Right. Exactly.
And it's like, wow, that sucks. That's pretty shitty.
I mean, I've been broken up with in some shitty ways, but like that definitely would take the cake for me.
Yeah. Getting picked, having
zombies. But she's. Kind of leaving him well, for she's, her husband?
Yeah, she's already question with mark. Rick. But
is she?
Well, I mean, she was married to him, but she thought he was dead.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, we come back to that question, though. Like, at that point, though, like, does your marriage still really exist?
Yeah.
Can we, like, play for a moment? What if, like, Rick, let's say, like, this was, The Walking Dead was done, say, like, almost, like 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
In the cast, in the role of Rick Grimes, Harrison Ford.
Oh my God, no!
Where's my wife?
Where's my wife?
You're sleeping with my wife. Get out of my prison.
You know who would have made a good Rick Grimes? I think in like the 90s, Alec Baldwin.
Oh, wait! Like
Hunt
for Red October.
Hunt for Red October, Alec Baldwin. Not freaking Alec Baldwin or Saturday Night Live Alec Baldwin.
I've never seen The Shadow.
Oh, man. Only The Shadow knows what fear lurks in the hearts of men.
And it's the fucking Shadow movie, because that fucking thing was horrendous.
That was terrible. Bro. You got to listen to those old radio old-timey radio shows.
When
Shadow.
I was like a little kid,
yeah.
is when that came out, and I thought The Mask was the bad guy in The Shadow.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, oh, that's going to be a great movie. And then I realized there are two different things. I was like, this is dumb.
You didn't like The Mask?
No, I was just like, well, wouldn't it have been more interesting if The Shadow's finding The Mask?
Well, now you've just created the greatest fucking property ever.
Yeah, really. I
mean, Warner Brothers snatched that up.
It looked like, I mean, he was wearing a zoot suit, and like The Shadow looked like it took place in like the 30s.
So yeah. Did you also think Dick Tracy was fighting these guys too?
Oh, Dick Tracy.
He wasn't?
Yeah, Pruneface was actually the Shadow. You didn't get that? Subtext.
Wasn't he? You know what would have been, I don't know why this popped in my head, but you know what would have been a really cool fight is to take all the Dick Tracy villains versus all the Batman villains and put them against each other and have them fight it out. I think that would be funny.
Well,
anyway. That was a random sidebar. I don't know why that popped
in my head. Like it. Hasn't the Batman universe already shown that everybody in the mob is like outclassed by villains?
Yeah, pretty much. But I just think it was like, isn't there? Oh no, he's a good guy. Like, because there's no face in
the blank,
right? And he's a villain. But in the DC universe, there's the Question. And he's a good guy,
right?
And he has no face.
Yeah, so
that'd be cool. Two no faces going up against each other. Anyway,
or they team up to fight Two Face.
Oh yeah, two no faces versus a Two Face.
Or Two Face.
Weird.
Yeah, Two Faces fighting the two guys with no face.
Oh, that'd be cool.
See, what? Fucking give us Batman. Let us write fucking Batman.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, seriously. Is Dick Tracy the comics? Is that part of Marvel or DC?
I don't
remember.
Think that's either.
Whose property is that now?
I would guess Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Because
they had the rights to the movie, right?
Right.
So no, that was Disney.
That was Disney?
That was Disney.
No way.
I shit you not.
Well, then maybe they have it with Marvel.
Maybe. You know, I would not mind a
reboot of Dick Tracy. I wouldn't. That's a great idea.
I honestly watched Dick Tracy the other day. It was on HBO.
Oh, no way.
It's fucking actually a very watchable movie. Like
it holds up.
It's Warren Beatty and Madonna.
And Al Pacino's fucking great in that movie.
He's good.
And I didn't get the joke when I was a kid, but like watching it now, it's hilarious that he's misquotes everybody in that movie. Like there's a running joke where he is, you know, like he's always throwing out quotes, mm-hmm. and he's like, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Thomas Jefferson. Just like shit like that throughout the entire movie. It's amazing.
No, he's the best when he's hamming it up, when he's super eccentric.
Oh,
so
God,
like when,
so good.
You know, when he is doing
walnuts, good for the liver.
When he like when he's in Devil's Advocate,
yeah,
or
Son of a Woman,
when he's just like on the fringes, when yeah. he just lets like Scarface, when you just let him play.
I mean, like the most memorable scene that, or one of the most memorable quotes from Al Pacino is the Heat quote: "The she's got a great ass."
Yeah,
but that's like the one movie or one point in that movie where he breaks and really lets it go. Like,
yeah,
the rest of the movie is very subdued for the most part.
Brother, you are going down.
Are you kidding me?
I think some of his best work was in Devil's Advocate when he's doing the monologue at the end.
Really?
Saying,
right. Yeah, that's an awesome monologue.
He's like, I'm a fan of man. I'm a humanist. Maybe the last humanist. I'm just like, dude, beautiful.
Yeah, he plays, like, especially in that movie, like, he plays one of those villains where the villain logic in that movie is great. Like, I'm a big fan of villain logic in general, which...
Man, we're relapsing into last week's villain cast.
Yeah. But, like, just the whole idea of, like, you have... If a villain, like, the reason why they're doing something, mm-hmm. you can be like, oh, so if I saw it from that point of view, it would make sense to me. But, like, the view is just a little bent.
You know why I like Devil's Advocate so much? I'm a huge fan of the movie. And
Keanu Reeves.
No, you know why? It's because I want Satan to win at the end. Like... Like, I don't care. Keanu Reeves, like, he's serviceable, but Al Pacino, like...
I don't remember the ending of the movie very well.
So
doesn't, I remember...
He tries to
but
get
doesn't
him
a, he technically win, though?
He wins. He turns back time, and then
right.
he starts over
I remember
again.
It goes back to the...
Vanity,
when he splashes
it's my
water.
Favorite sin.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't remember it super clearly.
Rewatch it. It's worth a rewatch. Every time it comes on TV, I rewatch it.
I know that scene super well because I'm a big fan of just Al Pacino speeches
yeah.
in general.
God, that's so good.
I don't think it, if I, from what I remember, I think I've only watched it like twice.
So this is our romance cast with Al Pacino. We're all in love with him.
Well, we all are.
we can always bring it back to Scent of a Woman, which is a very fucking sexy movie.
Yeah. Chris O'Donnell.
God damn it. You're right.
The tango scene in that movie, like if you can.
If you get tangoed up, just tango on.
That's so sexy.
Yeah.
I was like, I would fucking blow you under the table right now.
That is literally the sexiest that Al Pacino has ever been. Ever.
Or just like as a character?
As a character, physically. I'll put that out.
Like, physically, he was pretty
good. Sexier than when he was in Godfather
Part
1.
I was going to say, he's real good in Godfather 1. Like, he's a good looking dude in Godfather. You like. now, because we're so used to old Al Pacino and like gruff voice Al Pacino. Like, it's weird to go back to watch Godfather 1 where he's like, he's very soft spoken, where he's like,
my father, he just handed him a pen and said, either your signature or your brains are going to be on that contract. He's like, so he's so quiet.
Yeah,
like,
and then
that's MK. That's not me.
Like, that whole,
and then he gets Dog Day Afternoon, and he's like, ah, da, ka, and it's like all loud.
I actually have never seen that either, and I really, really want to.
Wow, we need to have an album.
Have you seen Serpico?
Yes.
Okay. I have not seen that one.
Serpico's great.
It's good? All right.
I actually watched that for the first time recently, because I was just like, I haven't seen it. Why haven't I seen it? He's great in that.
It's a fun movie. It's not a fun movie, but it's a good movie.
You know, I would compare, for people who haven't seen it, Leonardo DiCaprio's performance in
Departed.
The Departed is very similar to Serpico.
Okay.
It's because
very troubled.
He's just troubled and always looking over his shoulder. He doesn't know
twitchy.
What. Yeah. And it's really, it's like, it's off-putting in a great way.
Hmm.
And no Academy Award winners for that.
Yeah,
oh man, we'll do a recap on the Academy Awards.
A Pacino cast.
It'll be a great cast.
Hoo-ah! Speaking of which, the Oscars is this weekend? Next weekend?
This weekend? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow night. Or we'll have to do an Oscar recap next weekend.
Yeah,
we're taking the mystery of when we're casting out.
Oh, the editing time travel magic is eroding away, and we're breaking the fourth wall.
We're pulling back the curtain.
The fourth cock. Sorry, I'm thinking of a cocks.
We're pulling. Okay, yeah. So let's start talking about those.
let's start talking about cocks. Romance.
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 We had a topic. We started talking about Al Pacino, but we're gonna get back to it.
We'll find our way back. We left breadcrumbs.
Yeah, like Hansel and Gretel, baby.
They were a romantic couple, weren't they?
No, they're brother and sister, motherfucker.
That doesn't mean they can't be a romantic couple, too.
If Al Pacino ever agreed to do a video game, how would he be best used?
Al Pacino in a video game. I would love to see Al Pacino...
Villain.
As a villain? I would love to see him as a...
I wouldn't want him as, like, one of the, like, the expository sagely advice people. No, he needs to do his fringy crazy shit.
I was gonna say as like an eccentric item vendor.
No, that's a waste.
What
man.
Are you selling? What are you buying?
What are you buying?
No.
What are you selling?
I got these new goods. You gotta check them out. Come on!
It would be entertaining, but
come on and look.
I think it would waste his potential. I would think more
have
like
a margarita.
It just feels like the type of a margarita.
It would be a total waste, but I think that would be the beauty of it.
Right.
What about like if he was in like a Mass Effect or type game
as a
where
companion
he's
character.
Or as a companion or like the villain like trying to take over the universe, something like that.
Yeah, but and then
they kind of did that with Martin Sheen.
Yeah. Or like in a political action thriller type game, like a
Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
He's in.
Wasn't
Kevin Spacey? In a recently
Call of Duty.
A game
yeah,
called
Call
yeah.
of Duty.
Yeah.
Totally. It was a
cluster bomb?
I think it was.
I never played it, so I
from
opinion.
What I saw, it was he phoned it in.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of I think that's the problem with a lot of actors in general is they don't
he
take
just,
the medium very seriously.
Right.
Like Dinklage's performance in Destiny was so bad that they re-recorded everything.
Wow. Yeah, with Nolan
he,
North.
But he was also in Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones game.
And
the,
I heard that was
the Telltale
pretty
one.
Good.
That's good.
But here's the thing. I think he didn't have a very good brief on the character because
the character's a fucking robot.
The character was a robot, and he kind of was just like he played it as his understanding of a robot.
Yeah.
And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because he doesn't seem like the type of actor to really phone it in.
Right. Yeah.
Well, for reasons
maybe he's just not used to
obvious and not so obvious.
Maybe he's just not used to voice acting, you know?
Maybe. But I mean,
maybe it's hard if you're method, maybe it's hard to get into it if you're just sitting in a booth, you know?
And what is your method if you're a robot?
I don't know.
Like, how do you get in character as a robot?
I can't get erections. I'm not sure.
You watch Futurama and you like try
you
to emulate Bender.
I would love to see that though. I would have loved to see Dinklage be Bender in Destiny.
Oh,
that would have been amazing.
What's a great romance?
Leela and Fry.
Leela and Fry is
like a great or
the
actually,
ongoing romance.
The best romance in
it's the best screen romance because it's it never quite
gets there.
Resolves.
It does.
It never, well,
in the last season it does.
Of course, yeah. In the last season. But what I'm saying is, for screen, it never quite resolves, yeah. And that's why it works.
Let's talk about the unrequited thing, like the ongoing thing. Because the minute you start hooking people up and stuff, then the tension's gone, and then it just sucks.
AKA Friends. That's exactly what I was thinking of,
when they started pairing off the Friends.
That's why Rodman One Half has fucking 50 volumes.
Yeah, seriously. But
is that really why?
Yeah, because it was just... Rumiko Takahashi really loves to fucking, like... really, like, you know, just like keep shit right out of your reach,
and that's they just keep blue balling us, and that's where that's why we keep watching.
And that's why we have fucking Inuyasha still.
Yeah, seriously, because Kagome and Inuyasha are never gonna fuck, like, ever.
They will never.
That doggy style is never coming.
Is Inuyasha the one with the ears?
The dog demon with the long white hair and the
I've never
the
watched
robe.
The
it's
show,
okay. It's DBZ.
If you start
girls.
Now, you should be able to finish by 2030.
See, I've never. That's the part of the reason why I never got into Dragon Ball is because it's so fucking long. Like, yes. The couple episodes I've ever watched, there was literally a span of time where, like, it Dragon Ball came on before Batman.
Yeah.
And I remember watching, like, the last 5-10 minutes of Dragon Ball every day for a while. And I was like, he's still fucking charging.
No, yeah.
Like, he would just charge his power for weeks.
It's just filler. It's filler. I want to see the original series Dragon Ball. I want to see Dragon Ball Z and GT. I want to see them edited without the sweat.
DBZ abridged?
Well, yeah, without the sweating and without the powering up, and see how long it takes to get through. It'd be like
probably 5 minutes.
Yeah, it'd be like 10 minutes.
You know what's interesting? I would argue that DBZ did 24 before 24 did 24.
It's all real time.
Just like, how long does this fucking take?
Talk about shitty romance. That series had the worst, most dysfunctional relationship ever. Goku and Chi Chi.
I thought you were gonna go for 24. I was like, yeah, everything Jack Bauer touches dies.
No. I mean, but that's no.
that's about as dysfunctional as you can get.
Goku and Chi Chi. Like, he's never home. And he's a complete idiot, and
sure how he made a son.
It's always taking his son into, like, life-threatening situations and leaving his wife behind and doing absolutely nothing.
Is that really what the show's about?
But if she's okay with that, is that
she's not okay with it? He just takes her. Yeah. They just never, like, oh, so when Goku is grown up, he takes his son Gohan, and just they go off and fight. You know, Goku's all about fighting the baddest motherfuckers in the universe to prove he's strong, and he's like, oh, I want to make my son strong too. And here's Chi-Chi at home trying to, like, to educate her son and get him a job and everything. And he's just like, no, we're going to go train for, like, 5 years. We'll see you. And there's actually a couple episodes where Goku is trying to, like, get Gohan to go away with him. And he pushes Chi-Chi away and will, like, actually just knock her back because he can't control his own. Yeah, because he can't control his own strengths a lot of the time.
Whoops.
Yeah, like, literally. Yeah, seriously. And they just laugh it off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Goku's kind of a dick.
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
A well-intentioned idiot, but an idiot nonetheless.
So a moron is the most strong being in this universe.
Pretty much. Well, cuz I think the reason is he has a strong, like, moral compass, but he's, like, very unintelligent as far as everything else. Like, he's a battle genius, but, like, as far as, like, common sense and, like, book smarts, and he's got nothing.
So what's his purpose?
To inspire people? I don't know.
I've never really
to be
paid
strong.
Attention to
Is there
DBZ,
like a subtext behind Dragon Ball at all, or is it just like pure?
It's just pure
entertainment.
Like, entertainment pure and like
no nutritional
fantasy.
Value.
Yeah, I mean, it's inspirational. Like, makes you want to be stronger and better and
that
faster.
I don't know anything about the show, but I know I want to be over 9,000.
Yeah,
like, that's all I know about the show is that I want to be over 9,000.
We'll go over it in our anime cast.
You know what else would be really entertaining right now?
Hmm.
Watching you drink.
Oh, that shine hit me pretty quick. I gotta snap back. I haven't had I gotta pace myself.
Is the last time you drank the last time you were drinking out of the cast?
Yeah, I don't drink during the week.
I'd love to talk to you about my relationship with Scotch.
Mm, that's a romance that
a romance that will never die.
What is the best video game relationship you've experienced?
Dragon or Double Dragon.
Billy and Jimmy Lee?
Big Boss. With those diamond dogs.
Oh, my God. Actually, you know what I don't like about a lot of Japanese games is, and this might be a very broad generalization, but I feel like the male-female relationships never really make sense in Japanese gaming.
And how? In what way?
Because they're very reductive, very simple?
They're extremely simple. Yeah. Like, they don't. It doesn't make sense why the people who love each other love each other. Like, I don't understand. I don't get why. Like, okay, for example, in like you were talking about in Dragon Ball Z, why is Goku's wife in love with him? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, they met each other as kids and they kind of.
But that doesn't mean anything. So what? I knew girls as kids too. It feels like
a lot of anime and actually JRPGs too. Because
it's just a proximity.
Proximity. It's like, you know, it's like we've done an adventure. Now we're supposed to be in love.
That doesn't make sense, because by that logic,
or like I'm the male and I'm strong, and I'm the female and I'm not so strong, and you've protected me, so therefore now we're in a relationship.
But see, like in Final Fantasy VII, Cloud should have been with Tifa. Then.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But instead, he's with Aeris, which I don't really understand, because Aeris and Cloud, it doesn't make sense why they're even together.
Well,
the heart wants what the heart wants.
No, but like, why? Like, there has to be some level.
She wanted Zack anyway. She was with Zack.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So like, Cloud just wanted to be Zack. He was just jealous, envious.
So it's just weird then. Like, there's just not really like.
I think she felt sorry for him.
There's no the chemistry aspect feels like it's missing in a lot of.
Well, I think
JRPGs.
It's always been like in every narrative. It's always about the thrill of the chase. It's not necessarily about the nitty-gritty of relationship, because as
This Is 40 was about that,
and some people are this some people 40. Love
Judd Apatow movie.
Some people are in love with the idea of being in love and that unrequitedness. Like, some people get, especially young teenagers, they get in love with being the idea in love, and just like
the
idea
grind of it,
the idea, like, they've elevated it so high that the actually ever getting it doesn't live up to their expectations. So like,
and
being in a permanent state of like yearning and adoration and idolization like is what the love is about.
And who is anime mostly
targeted for is teenage girls and guys.
Yes. Who have yet to understand the nitty gritty of love.
That's why it's a lot of times.
That's
it's
why
reductive.
It's always about just the chase. It's just
or
like,
the physicality
of
it.
Just out of reach, because that's what we kind of experience.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at let's examine some more maybe complex video game.
Maybe you guys haven't, but that's kind of my.
That's your deal.
That's kind of my like high school experience in a nutshell.
What about like some more complex video game relationships? Here's something that pops to mind is what I kind of like the dynamic of is Chrono Trigger. Do you guys ever play Chrono Trigger?
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, so Chrono Marley Luca, right?
So
Chrono's
like DBZ though, right?
What?
It's like DBZ.
Akira Toriyama did the art. Sakaguchi did the production. Nobematsu and Mitsuda did the soundtrack. That's why the
Listen,
game is...
all of that sounds like Japanese to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Easy peasy Japanese-y.
That's the one where the frog guy...
Yeah, frog guy. So it's
he
a
never
time...
gets laid, does
it? The frog guy?
Yeah.
Nobody
wants to fuck the guy, the half-man, half-frog
well, I mean,
creature.
For frogs, it's just like spray a cloud and then hope someone
just lay the eggs
it.
And then yeah. The other person comes along and puts the...
That's getting
Was that
lucky.
One of his attacks?
No.
I thought he had a cloud. No, I swear to God, I really thought he had like some type of cloud attack.
No, he has a frog thing where he summons that gigantic frog and it comes down and bounces over everything.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
All
right. Tell me about the relationship,
okay.
Because I know nothing.
You've never
about
played Chrono Trigger?
Chrono Trigger.
Okay,
I'm assuming it has something to
do
with
time travel,
guns.
No.
Sorry,
it's gun? About a it's gun a gun that shoots clock
that shoots time
clock gun time gun. No.
Oh my God,
that's
the
a
next
great
script, like,
idea.
Time gun, time gun.
Just shoot time at you. Oh my God, that's a great idea. Like,
time
just like,
gun.
Like shoot a gun and then like
it ages,
ages you or it makes you young. Like shoot somebody into a fetus. Like every time you shoot them, they get younger.
It's the Benjamin
and
Button
yeah.
trigger.
Yeah, seriously, no. Think about this. Every time you shoot them, they lose knowledge, they lose experience.
Holy shit.
Or
that's way too OP though. It's way too overpowered.
That's great. That's like something that a Time Lord should have.
It's like a top tier weapon.
Yeah, right. That'd be like time. Anyway, so Chrono Trigger.
How long would you grind for that?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like that would be too powerful too in the wrong hands.
Right.
Because what if like you get some weirdo?
What if the time gun Oh my God, this is fucking like, you ever get one of those ideas where it's just like, I just came in my pants?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we go forward, property Bob Shrey.
Bob Shrey. The time gun, you shoot it at somebody and it reduces or adds their life, but it takes away from yours. So you can shoot somebody and take like 10 seconds or 10 minutes or a year, but then it's subtracted off of you.
Ooh, that's less OP. That's kind
it's
of
less
brilliant.
OP. It's like that, in that's time, too. That's an anime show right there. Can I, that's a okay. fucking anime show.
Okay,
right
okay,
there.
Okay, okay. On that same vein, yeah. Sidebar. You have the okay. This is I take no credit for this. Is from my friend Ellis.
Okay.
You have the ability to time travel. Okay.
Okay.
But every time you use it, it subtracts a certain amount of length from your penis.
Or your what?
Like
so, like if you travel like 2 years, that'll take like 2 inches off your penis,
for example.
Well, then you can time. I can time travel once.
wait. Okay, but we're assuming go back in time.
Anyway.
Oh, okay, so if either you go way. Forward,
but,
that's my way to bigger.
But you always lose. It's kind of that in that same vein.
A big curly purple vein.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So veiny.
How often do you use it?
Well,
would
I mean,
you sacrifice
I think
serious... the length of your penis in order to time travel?
No. No. Maybe I don't know. I have to think about that one. That's hard.
I feel like that's one of those ones that you only use in like the most dire of circumstances.
Yeah.
Like you're
if you're life threatening.
Well, you're about to get into a like you look up from texting and you're like, holy shit, I'm about to get into an accident, and you jump back like 3 seconds to like so you can hit the brake.
No, like, I think it would be a cool idea for a show if it was like you time traveled and it takes seconds off your life or it takes like minutes off your life.
Yeah, but that's
so,
less in- that's less
yeah,
interesting.
But that's like there's less at stake.
What if you time travel? Every time you time travel, you lose like memories.
Yeah, but I mean, them. What if you have a micro penis? I mean, which is worse?
Are we losing length or girth?
Length and well,
is it
no more importantly length? Really. Okay. I suppose.
Ladies,
I
you decide.
Ladies can decide which is more important.
Well, or does it randomly take off and like for every year you go back, does it take off like half?
Yeah, like what's the ratio of loss?
Yeah.
Well, we can come
well,
up
ratios
with that.
Are important. Like yeah. That's really important.
It's kind of crucial information.
But the fact is that you're still losing length.
Well, but if it's like okay, if it's like a quarter
or girth,
of an inch
length and or girth.
If it's a quarter of an inch per 5 years, then that's not very much. If it's an inch for every 6 months, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So that matters. Like, context is important in these situations. Yeah.
Well, we can analyze the ratios later. In the meantime,
and can you also go negative? Like, can you travel so far back that you have a vagina?
No, just
like, it implodes
back. Exhaust your fuel supply, which is apparently the length of your penis.
No, but technically, like...
So you're saying the dick is like the flux capacitor?
Yes.
It's your Mr. Fusion.
It's the
Mr. Fusion?
It's... It depends on how you look at the act of sex.
Okay.
Really. It's a beautiful it's a it beautiful is. Act.
It's more of a fission.
It's more like
situation.
Fission, yeah, not fusion.
No,
it's fusion.
It's fusion.
I don't know
because it's two
fusion.
Things.
I was never a science guy.
I mean,
fission's apart. Fusion's
if you're
together.
Trying to avoid getting pregnant, that's a fission process.
Well, when the way that I've had sex or recently, it's always a fission kind of process. It's me being shoved back by my girlfriend.
Chrono Trigger, time travel game. 1994, Squaresoft, before it became Square Enix.
Oh, Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.
So I want to do an LP of this at some point.
It's a great
It's a great game. Beautiful game.
I
want to
watch
great music.
It because like I don't know it that well.
I have it on cartridge for SNES. It's on emulator. It's really good. Anyway, so Chrono's a silent protagonist, so you're very much in his shoes. Like, you make the choices. He doesn't say anything.
Your character is Chrono?
Chrono, yes.
So you're Time?
No,
his
like...
His name is Chrono.
He's like a redheaded Goku. He
Who
looks like redheaded Goku.
Would name their kid Chrono?
That's a cool name.
That's a cool name. I would name my kid Chrono.
Would you?
If I ever have
Anyways.
One.
Anyways.
It's like naming an Asian guy Ivan. It makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
We just
you
go
guys.
With that.
Fuck you guys.
So,
listen.
So you time travel between all these different periods. And you've got, from your own time period, like the present, mm-hmm. is Chrono. And then he has two friends, Marley and Luca. Luca is his, like tomboyish inventor best friend. And then Luca...
Is it a girl?
Yeah, it's a girl.
Oh, okay.
Luca's a girl.
So it's girl next door.
Girl next door, like, inventor, and then...
She's the one who's wearing, like, kind of Princess Jasmine-looking clothes, right?
No, that's Marley.
Marley.
Okay. Marley.
So his two companions are girls.
Yes. So, and then Marley is the princess. And so...
How have I not played this game?
It's really
good. It's really good.
Really fucking good.
So, you know what? Let's put you behind the controls for the LP, and then I'll watch. And you see, like, watch someone play it for
too kind.
That's great. No, I love watching
you
people
just
do things.
You just
want to
see my unrequited love squirm.
Yeah, exactly.
I
don't have two girlfriends. I don't have two friends that are female.
So now you can be in the role of someone friends. Who does. Well, you got.
My life is finally complete. I can live vicariously through time.
So the thing is about Marley and Luca and Chrono is that there's like this since you're not, Chrono doesn't take a real active role in developing the love story between any of them. It's them acting on him, right? So you've got Marley, who in the beginning finds him kind of annoying and dumb, and kind of grows to like him. And Luca's his best friend and quietly likes him, but never really says anything. So you've got this kind of like love triangle thing going on the whole game. And in the end, it's not really It's not really resolved. And I find that, I mean, there's no like, they both go on these all adventures together and develop connections with all their teammates, but it's never really clear like, oh, I'm supposed to like Marley or I'm supposed to like Luca, which I really enjoyed.
So is it basically what you've outlined to me is Archie comics?
Basically, yeah.
It's a Betty Veronica
situation, yeah. But very well done. Now, and another interesting one from that era is Secret of Mana. Have you ever played Secret of Mana?
Yes.
On SNES. So, again, you've got a male protagonist, female protagonist, and then a male sprite protagonist who's like a little elf or dwarf guy. Anyway, there's three of them. And from the very get-go, the girl that you, the protagonist in that one, the female, is in love with somebody else. Like, they're trying to rescue him, trying to save him, trying to get through him. And eventually he, spoilers for a game from 93, sacrifices himself to save her. But in the end, they don't end up together. So there's a lot of instances in the old school Japanese JRPGs from like the SNES era where it's not that clear cut, like very simplistic, reductive. We go on adventure, boy and girl fall in love, the end.
Right.
So, and then if you want to get really complicated, you can look at Final Fantasy VI. There's a whole bunch of weird, complex relationships in there with males and females.
I never really dug the relationships in VI.
Really? Oh my god! Like, well, you've got Locke and
Stock and Barrel
and Terra.
Sorry.
And then Celis and was it
Edgar?
Edgar, yeah.
Edgar.
But
I'd go for Edgar.
I think everybody in that movie, you know, everybody in that show or that show,
Saban
that game
was the fucking man. Though.
He was man. But I think everybody in that game was too depressed and worried about having relationships because everything was going to shit.
Out of those games, I always liked the Cecil Rosa relationship. Like that was one that always kind of resonated with me.
Yeah. Well, why is that?
Because it just made sense. Like I could get why Cecil would or why Rosa would be into Cecil.
Because
he actually had a personality and like he had a sense of honor to him and Rosa was a good person and good hearted and you know, she's a white mage. So like, you know, she's obviously a nice person.
Yeah.
So that kind of made sense to me
and he had to work really hard to be a nice person.
Right. And it's that kind of, he's the bad boy that she's like, oh, he's going to change one day. Mm-hmm. And he actually does eventually.
Yeah.
I really liked that about that relationship because it felt more real and more like organic than a lot of other video game relationships, especially for that time.
Yeah, I agree. You know where the Final Fantasy relationships really fell apart? What I thought was Squall and Renoa and 8. I didn't get
really?
That. I didn't get that at all. I never really felt that connection.
Who wouldn't want to be with Squall though?
He's kind of a whiner.
No, but like he's emo. He's a little emo, but he's like in that My Chemical Romance-y kind of way, where it's like, it's a good kind of emo, where it's like, well, he's sad, but he's sad for me, kind of, you know, like, I get that. So,
yeah.
I mean, and maybe it's just a product of the music that I like to listen to at that time, too, but, I mean, that was like the dude who I was like, yeah, like, you're a hero. Like, that's what a hero is to me. It's like somebody who's like very burdened by the world, and, you know, so, I dug that.
Yeah. We're moving more into like the PS2, PS1, PS2 era. You know which? I'm gonna give you two examples of a really good two Final Fantasy relationships that I thought were really good, or one is really good, and one that I didn't understand at all. The one I didn't understand at all was in Final Fantasy X and X-2, Waka and Lulu. They hooked up for apparently no reason because Waka's an idiot and Lulu is
when did
like
they hook
really
up
smart
in that game.
So in the end of the 10,
the heart wants what the heart wants.
But there's
Walk is the most annoying fucking character in
all. Come on, brother. Oh, come on, brother.
The worst.
Praise be to Yevon, brother.
Oh my god.
Praise be to Yevon, brother.
So bad. So bad.
Gotta get rid of those out bed. Yeah.
Lulu is an amazing, not an amazing character, but she's a good character.
Are you okay?
I wanted to talk about something.
Okay. You had a worried look on your face. I thought.
No, I am worried. Because
pour another drink and it'll
come back.
Pour another drink and it'll get you there.
But no, yeah,
Lulu,
so
I liked Lulu. Lulu's a
great character, and Waka is questionable.
He's shitty.
But them together didn't make any sense. And in 10-2, they had a baby together, and what? Yeah.
Did they hook up between games?
Between games, yeah.
Okay, so like there was no hint of that in the game, really.
Oh, because
I thought she's kind of like calling him an idiot a lot of the
time. Yeah, and it's kind of like I don't understand what she sees in him. I understand what he sees in her.
Yeah, she's hot.
She's hot and she's smart and powerful. Chick. Yeah, but like I don't know. I mean, besides the fact that he's big strapping dude, he's an idiot and
He's not even that big.
He's the biggest one out of them, except for Kamari, who's the cat person.
Some chicks just like big dudes.
Yeah. I felt like Auron was a bigger.
Auron's a badass. I
felt like he was. Bigger though, physically. Like he looks taller. When I envision them in the party, he always feels taller.
I think it was because Walk had that stupid hairdo that was like an upflip in the front that made him look taller.
Okay.
Well, so that was a relationship I really didn't understand. One of the relationships I did understand was in Final Fantasy IX. I don't know. It's not the main relationship. It's Beatrix and Steiner. I don't know if you remember Beatrix and Steiner from Final Fantasy IX.
I have Final Fantasy IX. On my wish list on Steam because it's being released on Steam.
Oh God! So okay, I need to be there with you.
I'll be jumping into that.
I need to be there.
What
was nine
about again? Just give me a quick.
Nine was Zidane. What?
It's the old school one. The one that goes back.
I can't remember what it was about.
It's Zidane captures Garnet, the little princess, and she's a summoner. And then he has a tail.
Oh, right.
And then there's the Black Mage. It was cartoony and old school.
Yeah.
And Vivi's a Black Mage trying to find out why he and his people exist and why they're being used in this big plot to take over the world. And he escapes and joins up with Zidane and the crew to save the world. One of my favorites. But anyway, Steiner is the knight in shining armor, kind of very gruff and stern and kind of short-sighted, lawful good. Kind of stuffy older guy,
okay.
Who was the knight character and in your party, and then Beatrix is this kind of like hot, sexy, suave, also swordswoman. How do you say a female
swordswoman?
Swordswoman. Lady of the sword.
Lady of the sword. And she's kind of at the beginning against you.
Mm.
She sides with the queen. And is loyal to her, and then Steiner is tasked with guarding the princess, so he's always about protecting the princess, but the queen is obviously evil, and she's like kind of just doing, she's kind of down with the plot, and then she sees like the extent of the evil. So she at first looks down at Steiner's kind of lawful goodness, but eventually he's able to like, just by being himself, like stern and gruffy and kind of a clod, like he's kind of a bumbling, well-meaning bumbling, but like a heart of gold type of guy.
Mm.
And she's very cool and suave and like kind of sexy and very like more powerful than him.
I hate that character archetype, by the way.
Oh, what? The suave, sexy, cool?
No. The bumbling, but heart of gold character type.
I thought you were going to talk about the coolest.
No, because the problem with that character archetype is that it doesn't ever make sense to me why anybody likes this fucking idiot.
Because he's well-meaning.
But that's not enough. You can't just be well-meaning. You can't go through life being well-meaning and fucking up constantly, and everyone's just like, oh, I love this guy.
Oh, God, this is why I have no girlfriend.
We've hit the nail on the head for you.
Oh, God.
I think it's just because it's more one-dimensional. But I think what happens with Steiner over the course of the game is that he adds a dimension in that he learns that he's loyal for the sake of being loyal and good for the sake of being good.
Okay.
But that's what he was raised for. And eventually he learns why he's this way. He doesn't understand why He just does what he's told. He just does what he does. It's his job. Okay. Like, he's just duty bound, just duty number one. But then he comes to understand why, and everything he believed in is kind of broken and shattered.
So where's the relationship there? Is it his the relationship to his duty, or is it...
So more? at the end, he and Beatrix develop this little bit of a relationship in the end. So the relationship, first, he doesn't really get it that she is actually kind of falling for him. And she doesn't really understand either, because she is, like, evil.
Kudis.
So they're both kind of finding new places in themselves through each other, which I like.
Okay.
So
to me, the best video game relationships are portrayed in BioWare games, just because of the amount of content and time you get to spend with the characters. So you get to see the relationships develop, and they develop.
Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay, the new BioWare games to me. I didn't really care for Knights of the Old Republic games.
Well, which do you have a particular?
I mean, Mass Effect in particular, yeah. Dragon Age 2.
Like, Dragon Age 2 is good.
I mean, I loved the relationship mechanics in those games, because
and the fact that, like, because, like, especially Mass Effect, like the gender categories didn't matter.
Yeah, we're beyond that at that point.
Yeah, and that's nice. That was a nice transition.
And I really enjoyed the fact that, like, those games, you just start out by talking to this one character constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, in the first Mass Effect game, if Liara, the alien chick, is just an interesting character to you, you're going to send your Shepard to go talk to her a lot.
Yeah.
And through talking to her enough, you end up developing a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, really cool, because that's kind of how real relationships develop in a lot of ways. Is like,
well, that's the beginning of, like, S links and character links in games, like, right, where you have, like, connectivity between characters, and, like, your attentions, your
how much attention you pay to
division of attention is rewarded or punished, or it matters, you know?
Right. And to me, that is one of, like, the best portrayals of how relationships develop. And like, because definitely there were times and when I played through Mass Effect where I would just sit around wanting to talk to this one particular character because I like that character so much.
Yeah. Right?
And I mean, to me, Liara is clearly the choice for any Shepard in those games. I mean, Ashley's fine, but, like, Liara is really...
That's cool that the game allows you to, like, you know, to someone that might disagree with you to be able to make that
they'd
choice.
They'd be wrong. I mean, but it's America. You're allowed to be wrong.
Feel free to go on our Facebook or our webpage and tell Steven how wrong he is or how right he is.
No, the move is Liara in one, Amanda in two, and then you can make a case for either Liara or Amanda in three.
Okay.
So, but fuck, dude. A lot of
games, like the Telltale games too, allow you, like, to pay attention, like, whatever character you feel you develop a rapport with or feel a relationship to make choices that will continue to favor or not favor those characters as the story plays out.
Are you a fan of the Telltale games?
Yeah, I do like Telltale games. The Walking Dead one, the
Wolf Among Us
was great.
Wolf Among Us was, to me, the
Back to the Future.
I actually didn't play that.
I haven't played that one.
I want to, though.
It's just fun. Just super fun.
I saw a...
There's some puzzles that obviously are really annoying, but it's just super fun.
I saw a, like, promotional thing for that game where it was the guy who does the voice of Marty McFly.
Is spot fucking on.
It was... It made... I had no interest in that.
All right,
game
Ivan,
before that.
Let's hear your Marty McFly. You got to...
Oh,
you
really?
I
don't think I... Hold on.
You got to call it up.
Hold on. Give me 1 second.
All right. Let him
I might have one in my back pocket.
Oh, yeah? Let me see. Let's
Doc! See. I mean... no, that turns more into...
You're doing walking.
You sound like you're having a panic attack.
Well, listen. That's what Marty McFly does for the whole time. It's like... I sound like Morty. More like...
Nobody.
Come on, Rick.
Chicken.
Nobody calls me... chicken. That's my
Morty impression.
What
happens, Doc? Do we turn into assholes or something?
what are we, some sort of assholes or something? No. Marty, it's your kids. It's your Marty.
Yeah, I think your Christopher Lloyd's a little better.
Yeah, your Lloyd's pretty strong. Your Lloyd's pretty strong.
You know.
Your old men are better than your young boys.
Hey, don't you talk back to me.
You do old men well.
I want to propose to you guys, since we're on the... I'm sorry, I don't want to back in. Let's keep.
No, go. Go.
Well, just remember we're talking about Telltale. I want to finish up on Telltale.
Finish up on that games. Because I do remember what I wanted to say, and I wanted to explore something.
Okay. All right. Well, I just want to say that the Telltale games are like, we're moving into a space now, like with the BioWare games, Telltale games, where your attentions and ability to develop relationships with characters, especially Undertale. Have you guys played Undertale or heard about Undertale?
I have not. I've heard of
what
it.
What is that about?
Oh, man.
It's like, it's heartbreaking. Let me go. I think it's an 8-bit. Ish.
It's like it's supposed to be like
an old school
16/32-bit RPG. SNES RPG, like I think Earthbound.
Okay,
yeah.
Except it's like there's no real like killing. You don't kill monsters in it. It's more about like developing relationships and building relationships.
Yeah, you have the option in the game to spare or mercy or talk all the enemies. It's a phenomenon. It's actually like blowing up. There's all these let's plays and playthroughs of it. You play this little girl who goes into the monster world. And you have the choice of making friends with all these monsters, and it's about accumulating pieces of soul and then either freeing or trapping the enemies there and yourself. You yourself become the monster if you kill too many people.
Interesting.
I mean, the relationship dynamics in this game are nuts because the graphics are crap. I mean, so they spent all the time doing the character developments. The gameplay is like your battle system is like you have a little heart. You move the heart around the square, and there's all these different ways in which you have to dodge attacks. Mm-hmm. But most of it's just menu-based, and then the enemy responses change depending on how often and...
How shitty you are at
and that. How shitty you are as a person or how good you are as a person.
Interesting.
And you can develop different relationships with people, and then the game endings change based on it, and it's amazing.
You sold a copy. I'm buying this.
The save data changes, like there's certain things you can't go back and do if you made like you make choices and you can't go back.
Even
and
if you restart
the,
a new
yeah,
game?
Yeah, you restart.
What?
Really? Yeah. It's nuts. It's perma.
That's fucking insane.
Consequence.
So how do you, I mean, what do you do? Like you just can't, like you have to.
Get wrecked.
You can't so rebuy the game or like there's no like way to.
I think you have to like hack the save file or something like that. Or have to start a new game, like a
brand
new game.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. So go watch an LP of it. So they have
I don't want to watch an LP because I'm afraid it'll spoil.
So they have these things. They have the genocide runs where you kill everything and you actually become like a terrible person, or like the game. If you do like an all genocide run, the game changes completely.
Really?
And you can do like the complete altruistic run where you never attack anybody. The game is playable either way, and then there's all these gradations in between, and all the interactions with all the major characters and relationships you develop change. Your options change.
Holy shit,
yeah, it's
amazing.
It is amazing. It's a phenomenon.
Sounds like it's much work put into it.
I feel like you sold
two copies just now.
It's heartbreaking. It's like
you played through it.
I've watched LP and I played. I haven't finished yet.
So this is Knights of the Old Republic on steroids.
Well, eight or like 16-bit steroids, but yeah. Like games like that, games like the Telltale. Did you guys play? Oh crap. Oh my god, what is that game called? It just came out in the fall in increments. Life is Strange.
I want to play that. I really want to play that.
Okay, that's time travel. That's sacrificing. She can time travel back like 30 seconds, but it takes like energy out of her. Like her nose bleeds. She suffers for it.
I really, really, really
want to
play
that. And that's a lot of decision based stuff. And like there's an interesting romantic relationship, or like she has a friend. The main character, Max, has a friend, Rachel's the girl.
We're not spoiling anything for this game, huh?
No, I can't remember the name of the girl that Max is friends with. Anyway, so they're like best buddies.
Spoiler, the main character.
There's a lot of interesting relationships, but they're like best buddies, and like depending on a lot of choices you make, that relationship either blossoms, and then it comes kind of like dances close to like romance, but not quite. And then depending on how you choose,
Telltale game?
No, this is another independent game. I can't remember the production company.
I don't know, though.
But yeah, it's an amazing game. Story-wise, it's very interesting, and it's kind of dark and bleak.
I've heard that it kind of falls off.
It kind of shits itself in Chapter 5, but it's worth playing to get to Chapter 5.
That's actually been a theme in a lot of modern games now, though, is that like...
Everybody drops it at the fucking third act.
Yeah. Everything falls off at the end. But like...
So this is a note to everybody who makes a game: focus on the third act.
Start from the end and work your way back.
But I feel like take
a page from Justified. Bookend your games.
I
bookend your story.
I think that almost all media though nowadays that's kind of a theme. Like, it's great the whole way.
It's because
and then
everyone's just like, I need to get this going. I need to get this going. I need to keep it going.
Hashtag Battlestar Galactica.
To be fair, I kind of like the ending of Battlestar Galactica. It was it set out to serve a certain... They were trying to do what the original 70s version was trying to do, and they accomplished it at the end.
Talk about fucked up relationships and love interests in that show. Oh, my God.
Between
everybody
Hollow
was fucking.
Starbuck.
Everybody was fucking. Have you seen Battlestar Galactica?
No, no.
Everybody's drinking all the time and fucking all the time.
So it's kind of like the Nerdfunnel podcast.
No, yeah, basically.
No,
Starbucks.
I don't feel like it's fair to just make it black and white like that. I don't think so. It was more than that.
They're
in a desperate time.
Yeah. Okay. So we're back to cataclysmic now. Yeah. Like they're on the run from the Cylons. They're at the end of the world.
An apocalyptic scenario can bring out the best in a person, or it can really bring out the worst in a person.
And Battlestar is a perfect example of that, because people horrible shit and people do great shit.
Yes,
but Battlestar Galactica, worth a watch.
I'll get there, but I have to convince the lady to get into it.
I think she'll
like it,
dude. The
character driven.
Yeah,
it is
so
absolutely.
And one of the best episodes of the entire series is the opening two episodes. Like, it'll hook you.
Okay,
like first off, right away.
A lot of good episodes in there, though.
Yeah,
I would argue that.
Yeah,
we did the 4-episode Game of Thrones slog, because it takes about 4 episodes to get into Game of Thrones. If you
fair enough.
Yeah, no, you'll get in 4 episodes of Battlestar, you're hooked.
Like, yeah, because I used all my cred to get her to watch Game of Thrones with me.
Okay,
so
remember how we were talking earlier how we like spy genre?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know that kind of like that
paranoia.
Paranoia and the feeling of like, oh, can I get away with something? Can I get away with something? Okay. 33.
Think of it more like an action thriller that just happens to be like a space action thriller, like a
Red Hunt for Red October,
like
in
a
space.
Spot.
There are actual. It feels like there's something at stake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
the premise is like, you know, the premise of
robots.
So the Cylons come back and kill humanity, and they escape in these ships, and they're on this. They're getting hunted, and there's a convoy of them. But the thing is, the Cylons
there's infiltrators.
There's infiltrators that look like them. They don't know. Right. So there's all this.
Hundreds.
Basically, but they're indistinguishable from humans.
Right.
Well, mostly. But and then there's so much drama that plays out because there's all this tension, and then
I remember hearing at the time when the show was going on, like, who's the sixth Cylon or whatever.
But there's a lot of romance in there too, because you got this dysfunctional relationship between Apollo and Starbuck. You got this relationship that develops between two polar opposites of the president at Rosalyn and Commander Adama. You've got Hilo and what's her name? Grace Park. Which number is she? The Asian one.
No, I know it.
Come on,
what's her name?
You should know.
Not Apollo. Her
Boomer.
Name?
Boomer.
Boomer.
Yeah.
Thank
so you've got you know, Cylon and human love interest. You've got human love interest. You've got Cylon.
And
like,
the best part about this whole
series,
they're
trying to figure it out. Yeah,
is that as what's the word when someone's all over the place at the same time?
Manic.
No.
In the show.
The idea of, like, you know, God is...
Oh, omnipresent?
Omnipresent.
Yeah.
Like, the threat of the...
The omnipresent threat of...
Of the Cylons. When you... At the end of the series, you kind of... You come to the realization, and they also come to the realization that they don't really have their shit together either.
No.
They're just kind of like... They're flailing about as much as humanity is, and I think that's...
One could argue there's a romance between the humans and the Cylons.
Yes.
Because they're obsessed with each other.
Exactly.
It's a horribly dysfunctional love relationship, because some of the Cylons want to be humans.
Right on the nail of the head.
Yeah, and then
oof.
Oh my God, yeah, dude, we just reached a new level. We just leveled up.
How much of a commitment is the show?
Four seasons.
How many episodes?
It's like 20 odd episodes each.
Is it? No, maybe.
What about
it
Caprica? Do I have to watch that too?
Nah.
No, you can skip Caprica.
Caprica is supposed to be really good. I've never seen it.
The first season was okay, and it just got canceled before it got good. It was like it was one of those things where it's like it could have been awesome if they had just given it more time.
Okay, so we're
Ronald
talking
Ronald D. Moore. He's He's okay.
He's got his stuff together.
So roughly 80 hours of TV.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that Portlandia episode where they watch Battlestar Galactica?
Oh gosh.
Okay. You know the show Portlandia?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Which is an accurate representation of Portland, by the way.
Carrie and what's the guy's name? Fred.
Fred Armisen.
Yeah. So they're like, oh,
they're not
hey.
Them, by the way.
He's like, hey, I got these DVDs of Battlestar Galactica. Let's watch them before we go to this party. And like, oh yeah, sure. So then it's like. It uses the all the musical cues from Battlestar, and then like they're like five episodes in, they're like, oh, we'll skip the party, and so they just stay home and they just watch Battlestar
for
and
an
then
entire
the,
like,
the next
week.
Day they're like, oh, I'll just call out sick from work, and then they keep watching it, and then like it's like days later, and they're like, I just got fired, but let's keep watching, and
it's that fucking
it's
good.
That good, and then
is it on Netflix?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. I have some of the DVDs.
Okay,
I will loan to you.
Oh, by the way, did you know that they're doing a reboot of that
Battlestar movie?
Yes,
movie-wise, yeah, I heard about that.
And it's going to be more closely to the 70s version.
Yeah, I heard about that. We'll see how that goes.
Why would they do that though? If the TV series is so successful, why go back to the 70s version?
It wasn't
because money.
I feel like it wasn't successful,
but by fan acclaim and by
dramatic, critical acclaim, yeah. So anyway, then the Portlandia show. So they're like, it ends, and they're like, no, it can't end. Like, we've sacrificed our jobs and our health and our careers and our lives for this show. And so they write the new episodes and they get everybody. And so like the actual actors that play the
really?
Characters come over to read the show. And then oh my god, so then they
it's
give
funny.
Them. It's funny. It's and they funny. Read the show, and it's terrible.
It's awful, of course.
But then one of the characters that plays Gaius Baltar, he's like, hey, you know what? If you guys want to, I got these DVDs of Doctor Who.
And so they jump into Doctor
they
Who.
They just jump into Doctor Who. But it's like fucking, you know, like 50 years
you
of
know,
episodes.
I actually had watched that skit before I got into Doctor Who, and I was like, well, whatever.
If you guys are Battlestar fans, go do yourself a favor. Watch the Portlandia episode with Battlestar. The clip is on YouTube. You can find it. I'll show it to you. Okay. It's hilarious. And anyway, so...
And spoiler alert, we're going to get into Doctor Who at some point in time.
Oh, there's going to be a...
I'm on this fucking cast. That
actually should be one of the episodes of Explain
Shit to Steven.
Yeah.
Doctor Who.
Explain why it's good to me, because I that's one of those things that... So
We'll do a Who cast. But as far as like yeah, romance goes in that show is fucking amazing.
You hit the nail on the head.
The Cylons and the human beings are in love with each other, and it's a dysfunctional, horrible, brutal, love battering relationship. Because yeah, they want to be the Cylons want to be humans, and the human beings want to be free, and it's like. One of those like
it's
one of those
of
relationships where
cycle.
Yeah, it's one of those relationships where you've got like this.
It sounds like the most unhealthy like ex girlfriend.
It's like a love hate relationship. Yeah. Yeah, it's like where the girl they break up, but then they keep coming over, and they keep like going in for the sexy time, but then they can't. Yeah, it's very similar. They just can't break free.
I want to take a slight turn
mm-hmm.
and tackle the classic. Video game trope of relationship, which mm-hmm. is our princesses in another castle.
Okay.
Okay. I've actually, this is one of the things that I forgot, but then I remembered,
mm-hmm.
is the absence of...
The absinthe?
The absinthe.
Oh, the absinthe.
The absinthe of your fairies, obviously. No, the absence... of a relationship in a video game specifically.
Oh.
And what will drive you and your character that you'd play to what lengths you will go to, and you know how the idea of you know your the princess is in another castle where it's just a goal is
but it's never really there.
That's not really there. As opposed to the the contemporary model, which is more of like where it's the manifestation of obsession. And I propose to your guys' consideration Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, okay. Good call. Good call.
So at no point in time until like the very beginning and the very, very end, you see your love interest, if you will. Mm-hmm. But the entire game is... What lengths will you go
in order to manifest that romance.
And the thing is, you bring up a good point, because we are given no incentive as a player to, we don't know
pursue
anything
her.
About, yeah, like, why do we care about her? We don't know why.
You just know you do.
Yeah.
But you do atrocious things.
Terrible
in
things.
The name of love.
You stomp on innocent turtle heads and break innumerable bricks and kill gigantic lumbering towers of godly monsters.
And another game that's similar to this, in my head at least, is Alan Wake.
I always wanted to play that. I never played it.
It's fantastic. Okay. I mean, gameplay-wise.
It's very Twin Peaks-y.
I love Twin Peaks.
I love Twin Peaks.
If you like Twin Peaks, you'll definitely
okay.
be
okay.
It's right up that alley. And what it comes down to is like, okay, so in Alan Wake.
We can do some romance on Twin Peaks, too, in a second.
We will. Oof.
Twin Peaks
like,
romance.
In Alan Wake, all you do is you're chasing after your wife, mm-hmm. who's been abducted. By
what if Harrison Ford played Alan Wake?
By who?
Played Alan Wake. What would he say? Like?
Obviously, it would just be, where's my wife? I'll write this.
Any movie where's with a missing wife, just plug in Ford.
It's, I mean, Ford was made for that role.
Yeah.
But he chases after his wife. And both of these games, I would argue, it's really with the relationship. Is not necessarily with the goal that you're after,
mm-hmm.
is the relationship between you as yourself, between you and, I'm sorry. It's the relationship between the character and himself, really, mm-hmm. is what are they willing to do?
Yeah.
And that go from a very simple, like, you just need to keep going to the next castle in order to pursue this person,
mm-hmm.
becomes what is the motivation for you to keep pursuing this?
And yeah, what are you
gonna, it's a relationship with yourself.
Yeah. I see what you mean. So let's break it down. So we got Mario, let's start with Mario. So that's pretty simplistic. The princess is another castle. In the beginning, like, imagine you're going into Mario and you don't know anything about Mario. Like, imagine, right?
We don't know anything about Mario.
I'm from Brooklyn.
We don't know.
Do they have a relationship prior to the adventure?
We don't know.
Well, that she's
technically we do. There's an actual backstory to Mario.
Oh,
but
Paulina, right? He has to go save her from Donkey Kong, right?
I fucking don't know.
The original Donkey Kong.
The original
game.
Donkey Kong.
You have
yeah.
to Google it. There's an actual backstory to Mario.
Okay,
but it's so secondary that it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but actually, if you just put the game and don't anything about it, like all the you got Italian, you got a little character, you move him to the right,
well, you
jump
assume
over stuff.
Is Italian.
Yeah, right. Well,
he's got a big mustache.
And his name is Mario.
Yeah. But you don't even know there's a princess until you get to the end of the first level. It's not like in Double Dragon, where in the very beginning, the first thing you see is a woman getting punched in the gut, carried off, and kidnapped. And you're like, okay, now it's very clear that... Or like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game, where O'Neil gets captured, and
right.
you see it. You don't know. The conditions aren't set.
By the way, Double Dragon is amazing. Because of not Billy Lee, but Jimmy Lee, where like this is a dude who loves his brother so much that he's like, you know what, for your girlfriend, I'm gonna go out and mass murder people with you. It'd be one thing for Billy
to
go.
Do we know that they're actually dead? Because they just kind of like they get beat up and they kind of fade away.
Well, you
that could just mean
no, you
that
collect
they
whips and you collect knives and you stab fools.
Yeah. You also beat women,
but it's not like Punisher
Linda.
The game. By the way, one of the
that was
best,
a great fucking game,
great beat 'em up game.
Yeah,
that one. That's like there's no question those people are dead. But I, from what I remember from Double Dragon, I still beat 'em up.
Well, I remember throwing dudes off cliffs.
Yeah,
like throwing them off sides of buildings, like stabbing
them
with knives.
Some dudes have like survived 3,500 feet drops, whatever.
But I like the evolution you're describing. Like in the beginning, it was just a mechanic to get us moving. Like, okay, well, we need a reason to go
right.
To go right. So will just put a woman at the end of it, right? And primarily because
we'll put a woman at the end, and they
will.
Well,
I mean,
change.
And who?
And that is the biggest commentary in our society.
Who were the consumers back then? Right? Just there was not many girls playing video games back then. Was all
I would go right for a girl.
Japanese, you know, beginning was Japanese and American male boys, right? Yeah. And mostly males, like older guys, teenagers, you know. That's the market. Same thing with like the JRPGs and the manga and all that shit.
Here's the question I want to know. I want to explore. Is it we as a society have evolved in a very, very short amount of time, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
to where we need a reason to move to the right, if you will? Or
I think
we just needed someone to spell it out for us?
I think we're getting to the point where going to the right for ourselves is enough. Like you're saying in Alan Wake, like it's a journey by yourself. When you were talking about that, what came to my mind was Silent Hill 2. Mm. Like, because in the beginning, you get a note from your wife who's supposed to be dead, and she's in Silent Hill, and you go just because it's mysterious, right? But then you go through all this horrific, horrific shit and horrendous shit, and you do some pretty fucked up shit in that game, too.
And why?
Because in the end, it's your own bullshit you're dealing with. Nothing about her. She's dead. She's gone. It's all in your head. You're just dealing with your own shit.
Wow.
Spoilers for Silent Hill 2.
Also, that was, what's his face? Who did Joel from The Last of Us?
The
actor?
Yeah.
Troy Baker.
Baker. Yeah. No, Silent Hill 2, one of the best games, best psychological profiles. I mean, this guy... I mean, have you played Silent Hill 2?
I have not.
Oh, God. Okay.
We have I haven't talked about the whole thing.
But, I mean, it's basically a psychological profile of this guy, like his life and his break in his psyche as he watched his wife die and had to make some really horrific decisions about how to deal with his own feelings and his own actions regarding his wife.
Sidebar, for you. Did it actually happen? Or was it in his head?
So we don't know how much of it is and how much of it isn't, but that's the point. Is like
that's the beauty of it.
The journey is not about getting to Maria because we know Maria's already
dead.
But the mystery is like maybe she's not. But in your heart of hearts, you're going through. You kind of like this is all pretty fucked up. None of this is real. She's dead. Why am I doing this? Because I want to find out what's wrong with me.
Interesting.
So maybe it's more self-interested as we go. Maybe as we go along, maybe it's not going right. It's not an external journey anymore. It's an internal journey. It's more about
and
me.
That's the most complex of relationships.
And now
we're
getting to the point where it's not explained out to us. Now we're getting games like Telltale and into games that like BioWare, where now instead of it having spelled out, we go through the gameplay to do the inward journey. Now we're doing the inward journey through decision making, not gameplay.
You have the choice.
The
of
choice of
what
how
the journey
I
is.
Develop. Yeah.
Or I mean, because that's an entire like the relationship segment of that, like romantically,
mm-hmm.
is entirely arbitrary to the player.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to do any of the romance stuff, or really even of the, like the camaraderie stuff. Mm-hmm. It really just comes down to like how. What is your motivation to go right? Is your motivation to go right because you want to, you know, be with a completed story of character, or do you just want to battle aliens?
Yeah, that's the evolution of the gameplay. Because before we didn't have
you did go crotch first.
We didn't have a choice. It was thrust upon us, right?
Right.
We were told we have to go right because this.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, we can decide. We're going right because, you know, gameplay. We can go right because we want to be horrible or good or in love or not in love.
Right. And that's...
And we can have the choice of decide, like, what that means, what that love is.
And that's so telling of, like, the evolution of games as far as just the maturity of it.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, the technology has been pushed in such a way that we can do it now.
Yeah.
But that gamers want that. And that's what... almost defines a great game now is the choice to do those things.
Exactly.
The ability to choose.
I think that's what we've always wanted. The technology is finally caught up to the intention, to the actual sentiment.
Well, and then the next logical question becomes, what does the next generation of games, as far as romance and relationships in games, push to?
Hmm.
Because does it just become like, always the dream in like a VR world was that like you put on a headset and you put on a mic and you just talk and the characters will talk back to you in character, mm-hmm. and you just kind of live a life and you are, everything is dynamic and this and that. Like, do you think that we can ever achieve that?
Well, there you have a lot of like the VR headsets and things like that coming out where, well, what do you think about like having, like, because a lot of times now we have characters created like avatars for like your Steam avatar or whoever, right? So if you apply, you take that character on a journey through one game, does that, the results from that game's relationships carry over to another game? Like,
right.
Like meta character gaming, I guess you could say.
Well, and I mean, we've kind of seen the beginning of that in like the save data carrying over from one game to the next.
Yeah, where,
like, you know, it, like in the Mass Effect games,
mm-hmm.
your relationship choices in 2 will affect how a character treats you in 3.
Yeah. That's definitely, yeah, that's already happening. I think that's going to be one of the evolutionary steps, I think.
And where that's just going to become the norm of games in general.
Of course, that will limit what stories can be told from one game to the next, but...
But if it's always kind of a side thing where, like, it's not necessarily it's not a cornerstone of the plot of the game.
Or what if the decisions that you make in one game... like influence like base stats in the beginning of another game. Like, you don't have a choice to set your stats. Like, how you acted in one game, that save data carries over to the next game, and then you're set. Like, if you're a complete, like, total prick, evil asshole, and you have like certain like S links and stats that are set because of these relationships, then those carry over in the next game.
So Back to the Future, Telltale.
Yeah.
Does it do that?
Between episodes it kind of does. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well,
okay.
I mean, it doesn't do it in any like way that is of consequence, but it's,
well, that's saying that now they would put that, make it consequential,
because like you can choose your name, your fake name, like in Back to the Future 3 you're just like, oh, my name is you know, Clint Eastwood. But like there's a point where you're just like, oh, you could pick your name and it carries over,
right?
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm
coming in from the bathroom, so I'm just assuming I know what you guys are talking about.
No, we were just talking about how, what's the next stage in evolution of romance and gaming? Like, what? So we have more options in how we progress to the right, what reasons we have for going on these romantic journeys, how they, more choice in how they resolve themselves, how more choice in how we decide how they go, and how we end up as a character in the game. And now we're talking about, well, can we carry that across other games? Is like, is the next step like a meta evolution where we carry the characters we create with us to other games? Is that avatar, that personhood, or should we keep it separate? Do you want to be a prick in one game or a white knight in the other one?
Then I hope that my next question is relevant. What is more important to you both in that vein? Is it discovering who you are as a person, or discovering who you are in relation to another person in the game?
I would have to say probably relation to the game, because, like, I mean, that's what we're playing. I mean,
do you want to find out more about you as a person by playing this game, or do you want to?
Well, I do play games for characters. I like to find out. I mean, I do play games for characters, but I mean, that's a good question, because I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of games that have told me more about myself. Undertale's one of those games. Play that game, you'll learn what kind of person you are.
Yeah.
I play all games with any type of decision-making mechanic as myself. So I make the choices that I would most realistically
make.
So
Fallout 4?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I thought, I didn't actually know that you played Fallout 4.
I did. It's a bullshit game. That game is complete and utter bullshit. It's barely a game. I mean, it's almost like Walking Simulator with guns. Like,
wow. So Kamiya needs to be on this cast. Hear that, Kamiya? He just called you out on Fallout 4, girl. All right.
But any game where, like, okay, for example, because we keep coming back to it right now, but Mass Effect.
Yeah.
In that game, I play Commander Shepard as me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just every decision he makes is something I would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've realized that, like, I'm not... I can't say I'm unambiguously a good person,
mm-hmm.
but like generally, like I am, I stray a little bit closer to Paragon than I do Renegade.
Okay.
At the same time, like,
you're a good guy.
That's why we love you.
On a individual level, I am more of a Paragon, or I'm more of a Renegade.
Mm-hmm.
But as a whole, I try to play the games as
how
like
do you
a good person.
Classify yourself? Are you more chaotic good?
Yeah, that I'm chaotic. Probably like chaotic good or chaotic neutral in a D&D.
I've always been told I'm more along the lines of lawful good. Yeah,
you're a paladin.
More of a paladin.
What is a chaotic good person? Like class
good at any cost.
Good. See, I don't know if I'm that. I'm more of like a pragmatist.
Okay.
Well, that's
I'm a little more pragmatic.
That's still technically. I mean, in order to bring about the greater good, or a pragmatist, to what end?
To the and generally the. It doesn't even necessarily have to be the greater good. It's more of like the immediate good.
You're neutral good. So neutral good is like good if I can, but not.
No,
if
no.
I'm not.
See, not like that. Like I will be good, but it's more of like good to the immediate people around me.
Okay,
is the most like Rick. Okay. Rick is a very good example of like because I sympathize with a lot of Rick's choices. In the early seasons of Walking Dead, I sympathize with a lot of his choices because he's making choices that are not necessarily good for everyone outside of his immediate group, but they're kind of good for his group.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's still chaotic good.
Yeah, I think more chaotic good. Yeah.
Okay. So what would I be like? Is that like a ranger class?
No,
like
I was just curious.
Okay. I mean, you couldn't be an orc or anything.
I couldn't be a paladin either, though.
No. Paladins have to be lawful good.
You know, I don't believe that races can have to be like any particular classification. Guys.
Well, you don't believe in that race.
Guys.
Well, maybe D&D. Oh, I can't remember if the new version
I'm sure
has that
there
race.
Were good orcs.
Were you a D&D kid?
Yeah.
See, I've never really... I don't know if I've ever played a session of D&D.
Wow.
I'm familiar with the tropes of it and like the terminology of it. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if I've ever actually sat down and like really rolled up a character and done the whole thing.
You know, D&D is great for like sitting down and listening to nerds talk and drinking.
Wow, this is kind of similar to how we live our lives.
This is like a direct
No, Brian's got that Star Wars RPG that's supposed to be
that we've been talking about since Nerdfall episode 1.
He says it's going to happen this month. We'll see.
Do we cast that? Are we going
to
cast like,
I don't know. I'll talk
session?
To him about it. Yeah.
I think that'd be fun, kind of fun.
Yeah. So, anyways, on the spectrum of games, I play them as myself. And so I tend to think that the real world decisions that we make in those games need to be eventually reflected as a more progressive, like a carrying over of that into future games, which is what they've started to do in Mass Effect, but I want to see it to like a broader degree.
Okay, I see. Hmm. What about romance and love in like, so we'd covered TV and games pretty well. What about movies and books like, or stories or comics?
I mean, the greatest romance in books to me is Harley Quinn and the Joker.
Yeah.
It's not a book. It's not a fucking book.
How is that not a book?
It's not a fucking book.
It's got words.
It's a graphic novel.
That's a book.
It's a book.
Okay, what is a novel?
What is a novel?
Is a novel a book?
What's the page limit on a novel?
Fuck you guys.
I don't know.
Fuck you guys.
Hey,
what
you know
defines
what?
A novel?
It's not,
define a novel for me.
It is.
I have an
define
English,
a novel,
have,
please.
A novel is one without graphics.
Okay, so literally just something without pictures
yes.
makes it a novel.
Yes.
Lord of the Rings has pictures and illustrations, and that's a novel.
They have maps in almost
maps
every
and
fantasy book.
In what ratio to words to pictures?
Is there a
definable ratio?
No, tell me.
They never taught me that in grad school.
What would you say that the ratio between pictures to words is?
I don't think there has to be one.
No, you tell me.
Oh, in Lord of the Rings?
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, it's really, really, the words to pictures?
0.01.
Yeah, really, really small.
And which is... statistically still 0%?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's still
so
a novel.
If anything that has pictures is not considered...
Is a majority of pictures.
Graphic... It's called a graphic novel because it's a novel. Like, a red apple is still an apple. Green apple is still an apple.
Okay.
It's
so,
not a book.
So, okay.
It's not a book.
But you're defining book as, like, literature.
Have you read...
It's
right?
not
Have
literature.
You read V for Vendetta
okay.
or Watchmen? That, those are,
yes,
those
I
are,
have.
Those are huge books.
There's a lot of fucking words in there.
Yeah. Graphic
but
novel.
Is Watchmen not literature, then? Or is V for Vendetta not literature? Unfair. By your definition? No, it's not unfair. You fucking brought this upon
yeah,
yourself,
Yeah, seriously. Defend yourself.
No, I guess I
On
can't.
Guard.
It isn't... No, it's not literature, no.
It's why?
Because
there's pictures.
Fuck you. Yeah, no, pretty much. The entire thing is not expressed solely in words.
But that's
because there are scenes in V for Vendetta and Watchmen that have to be expressed through the medium of visual storytelling, as opposed to just describing it using words.
You could read Watchmen, for example. You could read Watchmen just through dialogue.
And get the entire picture?
That would be interesting, like, experimental literature project.
I can say that because I am a comic book reader who I am the type of person who reads dialogue first and then I look at the picture after.
Yeah, but I mean, there's the impact of Dr. Yes. Manhattan, like,
rising and, like, growing big and all that.
Well, yes. Not even just that. Him on... I can barely kind of remember him on...
The Mars with the big glass sculpture?
Yeah, that. Yeah. It doesn't have the same impact if you were to, you know... It's not the same as reading it as opposed to...
What about...
I'm not arguing that one... medium is better than the other. I'm just arguing.
What about a novel that's been adapted to be a graphic? That's been adapted to graphic. Like they have like Great Gatsby's been done yeah. comic.
It has.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones has too.
Yeah.
Has it?
Yeah. There was a Game of Thrones comic.
Dude, that probably happened like the fifth day that book was out. I'm sure somebody threw that out.
It wasn't. No, it was actually more recent than that.
Oh, really?
Okay. Within the last couple of years.
So would you say that Great Gatsby is reduced to non-literature if it's add pictures added to it?
Yes. Because it's not open to the reader for interpretation.
But what about like illuminated text and shit from like way back where they had
illuminated text.
You ever have the illuminated text? Like from,
I
don't know this either.
So illuminated text is when they have, they like in ancient times, all the way back, they have the text in the middle of the page, and they have pictures that go around the border, like with a big intricate introductory letter, and they have the pictures on the sides.
Like Art Deco, or
no. It's like it describes the what's happening in the book. Like there's actually like a story progression. Yeah, it's called illuminated text. You never heard of this?
I've seen it. Now that you've described it, I know what you're talking about.
Like
now.
Mostly, it's most closely associated with like medieval literature, but it goes way back to the ancient times because not everybody knew how to fucking read.
Okay, I'm gonna challenge your point here then.
Please.
So by your standard then, anything that the ancient Egyptians have ever written, or any Asian culture for that matter, is not
literature. Yeah, those are all pictograms.
Because it's all
not
pictograms.
True, not necessarily true.
It's pictograms.
Because it's not a picture in context of... Okay, what I'm saying is
you're talking about a definitive picture.
A definitive picture, exactly. Because in a sequence of pictograms...
I'm defending my own point for you. Fuck.
Huh?
What's that?
I'm defending his own point for him.
Well, I appreciate that, but I was going to get to that. A series of pictograms does not a complete context make, if that makes any sense.
Unless pictures are your language.
If you define
all words are
graphic
visual representation of a meaning.
But they're
yes.
a picture for you. Like you build a word picture in your mind.
Correct. But at the same time, for individual words does not make a complete context. Because if I were to draw a picture, I'm defining...
So it's
what?
A matter of being able to
I think,
for the
okay,
reader to vary,
okay, so,
vary it
like,
by their own context.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Okay. I see that. Okay. I see that point.
But why is that literature then? Like, what makes that any more valid?
If
it was one or the other, I would agree with you. Like, if you had a book of like just you ever see that book, The Snowman, when you're a kid, where it's a picture mm-hmm. picture book for kids, right?
Right.
No,
and it's just images. One. That's not literature. That's just pictures.
Right.
But when you concatenate both of those things together, pictures and words, I still think it counts as literature because there are words. I think they work synergistically. If it was just pictures, I would totally agree with you. If you took Watchmen or V for Vendetta or The Killing Joke or whatever,
and took
all the words away, I would agree.
Took out all of Alan Moore.
Yeah, I agree. It would not be literature. But I feel that because there are words involved, it is literature because there is a written word.
It elevates the visual medium into literature. Like Dark Knight Returns is one of the greatest pieces of literature ever written.
If anything, if nothing else, it gives you a style with which to enhance your own imaginations of the words.
So is a screenplay or a play literature before it's transferred into a different medium? Is that literature then?
Dude, that's totally literature.
Well, Ivan. He's busy.
I mean, then you would say that all of Shakespeare is not literature,
right? Because then,
but it is. It is.
And yeah, it's all. It's yeah.
Okay, so then what's the difference?
His point is that pictures alone are not literature. Words alone are. I'm saying that words and pictures together are,
and words are.
But there
and
words are. There aren't illustrations in Shakespearean text, nor is it in.
Okay, so if we had the script for The Watchmen, just the bare bones script, like Alan Moore's scrawlings, that's okay. Literature.
First, we have to
or the screenplay for the movie of The Watchmen.
Can we take a moment to define literature? Because
what does it say here? What do we got?
We're gonna have a lot of clicking.
Yeah,
You know what the fuck? I'm not getting any results right now. Hold on.
No results for literature. The internet doesn't know what literature
literally
is.
Literally doesn't exist.
Literally.
Literally, it does not exist. Define. Oh, shit. Hold on.
Define a shit. Okay.
Define literature.
I like that you put a little bit of emphasis on it. Literature.
Emphasis.
Written works, especially those considered of superior or lasting artistic merit. Written works.
Okay, so.
But there's
not
written
books
written.
And writings published on a particular subject, leaflets, and other. Matter used to advertise products or give advice.
They're okay.
That's
graphic novels are published and they're written works.
Are they?
They're not written. Okay, you're saying Alan Moore free-handed this? Like this is improv?
He just like free-willed it. It was just right. Like, yeah. You know, it is.
Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns was improv. There was no like symbolism or anything.
No,
that.
No authorial intention premeditated at all.
I will concede that fact. I know. I really will because it is well intentioned. It is when I say well intentioned, I mean it was
well planned.
Well planned and very deliberate in what he wanted to portray.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if the purist in me can allow graphic novels to fall under the purview of
literature. You sound like
literature.
Such an old man.
It's such an old man notion. And it is. I will concede the fact that I'm holding on to this merely out of
spite?
Tradition. Really. I mean,
but word and image is
but
almost
have yet to give me any definitive or really cogent to convince me that a graphic novel counts as literature.
But you just defined literature.
As a significant written work.
Watchmen. Viva Vendetta.
Viva Vendetta.
Dark Knight Returns. Those are
significant works.
Those are works.
Significant written works?
Okay. Go look up on your phone illuminated text.
Look up a New York Times.
Up, not fucking literature.
Look
assholes.
Up a New York Times best-selling list of the or a New York Times list of the most influential books. Watchmen will be on there. Dark Knight Returns will be on there.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Watchmen. I read it, I think Watchmen was like 8. I want to say. I'm like
hugely
hold
important.
On, hold on.
I could be wrong on the number, but
see,
I know Watchmen is.
My point is word and image are almost indistinguishable. See, look, illuminated text, pictures.
It's a manuscript. Wait, an illuminated manuscript is a manuscript in which text is
supplemented
with
image, yeah.
Decorations as initials, borders, and margin. But it says nothing that it suggests that it is a work of literature.
Look up famous illuminated texts. I'm sure there'll be
famous
some that are on there.
Illuminated.
I'm sure Arthurian legend. Sir Gawain of Galahad or I don't know what Sir.
Famous
the
illuminated.
Green, the, oh, the Green Knight. The Green Knight.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
I've never heard of the Green Knight.
I'm sure there was illuminated Homer.
I know I'm arguing a fairly unpopular point.
It's actually just more of the minutia of the point that you're arguing.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I fully understand why people would disagree with
the me. First segment of Ivan has an unpopular opinion.
Ivan has a popular unpopular opinion. Everything that's fucking drawn, get the fuck out.
It just, the problem is that you're discounting everything that ever could be transferred to it. Like Bobby brought up, like Shakespeare. That is a text. All his texts are written for the stage.
Yes.
So the point is that once it transcends to the stage, is it not literature still to you?
But in what form does it... In what form...
Are you just talking about like how you encounter it?
No. Kind of, yes. How, in what form has it lasted?
As a play.
Really? Has it?
All of this stuff has lasted...
Has every high school done a production of a Shakespearean play?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Every
high school production. But it doesn't live as that medium. It lives as... manuscript.
I would argue the other way.
No. You are.
If you ask anybody, Romeo and Juliet, the first thing they're going to say is, oh, it's a play.
That we read in high school class.
They'll just say, it's a play.
Or it's a movie with Romeo and Juliet, or with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Which was a fucking great movie. It was good.
Don't get me started on Baz Luhrmann.
That's a great fucking movie.
Everybody Wears Sunscreen was a great fucking song. Let's talk about Baz Luhrmann and romance in just a bit. I want to get to that. Okay, his red curtain trilogy, we'll get to
that. Great segue.
Yeah. But
it doesn't live as that. It lives as a, we consider Latin as a dead language. It is a dead manuscript.
But books are adapted for plays and movies all the fucking time.
It is, but
so it's not literature.
Most movies are books. 70% of the Hollywood productions are adapted from books.
Okay, so The Martian is not literature anymore.
Yeah. The Martian was a book.
I think I just broke Ivan's brain. He looks frozen.
No, I'm considering...
So is Lord of the Rings not literature anymore? Because it was on the screen?
Lord of the Rings is literature.
But they made a movie of it.
But way more people know that it's a movie than it's a book.
But again, it's not which...
Which came so first?
Which medium lasts longer?
Okay, wait. Are you saying that...
I'm willing to bet movies will outlast books at this point.
No.
Yes. 100%.
Are you saying that literature...
In 100 years, no one's going to be able to fucking read, bro.
I won't discount that, but I don't
so
think...
So then movies will outlast books.
It'll be like, oh, it's that book that they made into movie, but I never got around to reading it.
Are you saying literature...
that's still like, okay, it's so a book.
And then Game of Thrones isn't literature anymore.
You're saying
it because way more people have watched Game of Thrones than ever will read those books.
That is a fair point.
Okay, I think what you're saying is that literature.
He's a pretentious asshole.
No.
Nobody ever argued that point. That's a given.
It's literature if it is a repository for the meaning. So once it's translated out of the written word, it's no longer literature.
No, I'm not arguing that at all. Which is the more robust media.
But that's going to change.
What are we going to remember it by?
But that'll change. And it
might
change back.
Everybody still remembers Shakespeare as written works that they had to read in high school.
No. They all remember it's a play.
Bullshit. No.
Okay, what happens if everything gets translated digitally into movies and shit, right? And then there's
because
a gigantic...
No one ever watches fucking like J.J. What's his name?
Abrams?
not J.J. Abrams. The other one. The
J.R.R. Tolkien?
No, the motherfucker who did fucking... Avengers.
Joss Whedon.
There's another fucking J. Joss Whedon did fucking Much Ado About Nothing. Nobody fucking remembers that he did.
That was great. That was Clark Gregg in there.
Yes.
That was an awesome movie.
But everyone's just like, oh, they're doing a Shakespearean play that I read in fucking high school.
Okay. Then
nobody fucking thinks, oh, this is great as fucking Clark Gregg and the motherfucking whoever is Nathan Fillion in there? He's Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, Nathan
of course
Fillion.
He's fucking in there. Nobody fucking remembers it like that. People remember it as fucking like, oh, I had to fucking watch this shit. Oh, maybe I fucking watched a movie with Keanu Reeves in there and Much Ado About Nothing.
Okay. Then I have a question then. If it reverse engineers, if you take something from another medium and turn it into a book.
Novelizations of movies.
Is that not literature?
It's not.
Why?
Novelization of Star Wars.
Because I will posit this to you. Road to Perdition was originally a comic book.
It was a comic book.
And then it became a movie. And then it was novelized. And the novelization is arguably better than either of those two. So yeah, is that not literature?
There's a lot of novelizations of movies that are a lot better than their source material.
I'll concede that then.
So if that's true,
I think that's as good as the only victory we're going to get, that concession.
Because he's a fucking old man, and he's just not willing to admit that. Like, this shit is
I admit to you, I'm an old man.
It's just, it's...
Well, you're the youngest one out of us.
I know.
Fuck you guys. You,
but he has the most old man aesthetic, though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm on the cutting edge.
Are you fucking kidding me? Wife beater does not a cutting edge make.
I know. I'm wearing
one, not being one.
No, I'm rocking a guinea tee at the moment. So.
Guinea tee. No, I fully concede that I'm the only thing that I seem to be arguing is
pictures. Pictures make it not a thing.
Pictures are dumb.
No, and I concede that, but you guys have yet to come up with a convincing argument to sway me otherwise.
I would say that we have come up with convincing arguments and you just are ostriching it and sticking your fucking head in the sand.
You listeners, feel free to
weigh
in as well.
Chime in.
Let us know. We need some mediators.
Please tell me how right I am in comparison to these two dumbos over here. Chuckleberries trying to convince me that fucking comics will ever take over as literature.
They are.
Get
literature.
Off my goddamn lawn.
They are literature, sir.
Goddamn kids.
There are also comics that are more words than pictures.
Yeah.
There are minimalist comics, so it's just black and white.
But see, like, and like part of the problem is that you're also putting, it feels like part of probably why me and Bobby are arguing this so hard is that your defining of literature is putting graphic novels and comics outside of art.
Yeah.
He said art.
But it's.
What about Dr. Seuss?
Is not.
Dr. Seuss is stand the test of time.
That's not literature. No.
It's poetry.
I feel like in order for it to be literature for you, it's got to be old and somewhat pretentious.
Yeah.
Well, then you pretty much defined Ivan Chong for everyone.
Old and pretentious. Great.
But see, like,
literature, a body of written works, the name has traditionally been applied to those imaginative works of poetry and prose.
Okay, Dr. Seuss.
By the intentions of their authors and the perceived aesthetic excellence of their execution. Nowhere in there does it has any reference to a visual.
It doesn't
art.
Say they can't be either.
It doesn't say it can't.
Prose.
There's not prose. There's not prose in graphic novels.
There is not prose.
Okay.
Well, no.
You can't, dude.
There's
please,
prose.
Please. Yeah. You can't argue
was,
that.
Why did you stop him? I was gonna let him dig his own fucking grave.
No, because I saw. I fucking saw.
You
it
know what I love doing is I love letting walking Ivan down the primrose path and then just leaving him among the roses and then realizing he's among thorns. It's the best thing ever.
When?
I was about to.
No, I'll find my way out. Fuck you.
Yeah, you were about to get stuck, sir.
Yeah. Okay.
There is prose in
graphic novels.
In graphic novels, I concede that, but I don't concede that.
So you're just saying the prose aren't good enough.
Okay, I don't concede Bobby's point that you know just because they made Lord of the Rings into a movie, and that they have pictures of maps. There are maps in the fucking
that does make it a visual medium, though.
Is it?
Yeah. That becomes a visual medium.
That's not true because you can discount that fact. You can discount the maps. You can discount any visual medium, and you can still be able to find context within just the text.
But you could do that with a comic book, too. You could take...
And that's where we disagree again. Again, when there... You can't get the sense of Dr. Manhattan standing on the fucking, Martian landscape from just reading it.
Yes, you can.
You can.
100%.
You just imagine. Just like, hey, we're on Mars.
No,
so it's Mars.
No, he didn't fucking say it. He didn't describe it in words.
Then. No, to your point then. Okay. Shakespeare is literature because of play direction, right? And because you use your imagination.
Yes.
Okay. So the artist that drew The Watchmen, V for Vendetta, they were handed a script that was essentially a play.
Yes.
That had all the descriptions in
it. But then you
are... Why is that any different?
Because you have to define what that work is. What defines Watchmen? What defines V for Vendetta? We have never read the script for it. No, have you? Have you personally read a script?
I've read the script for Watchmen.
For the movie?
No, for like the comic.
Is there a transcript?
There's like the script is online. You can find it online.
Is that the robust the what the fuck?
The Alan Moore original transcript or like his script for like
the actual novel?
Yeah,
it's a novel.
Yeah, the graphic novel.
Well, then I didn't know that.
So
I will concede that. Then.
Okay, so if that is true, and even like you said, like more people have seen Game of Thrones than will ever read the Game of Thrones books, but that still makes Game of Thrones literature because the books exist in one way or another. Then that also would mean that based on the fact that you can read an Alan Moore script and it's still literature and you can build the word pictures in your mind and everything, then that also would mean that that is literature then. It doesn't matter the popularity or how anybody knows it. It's just the fact that it can be done and you could read it and interpret it in your own way.
But is that the persistent form of the medium that lasts?
It doesn't. Because, who cares? To Alan Moore, it is.
Yeah. For some people, in the case of Game of Thrones, some people have only read the books.
Nobody has only read the books.
Then you're defining...
There are people who have only read the books.
Then you're defining literature by how it's received, not how it's created or the
intent of it.
Is that...
See, I feel like you're just shifting around.
Now you're on the other side of your own point.
You've reached the event horizon where you have come over.
You crossed
to
through
us.
The wormhole of your own argument and come out the other side. Yo, we won.
We're broken.
Okay. Let's close
romance.
with romance and the Red Curtain trilogy. Baz Luhrmann.
Yes.
Red. I don't know what that is.
So, Moulin Rouge. Romeo and Juliet, and what was that first one? I can't remember. But Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge.
Romeo and Juliet's the most important one.
Can we take one moment?
Yes.
Let's finish our drinks.
Yeah.
Okay. We need a.
You know what we should do? We should do a Nerd Funnel drinking game.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And the fans could play along with us.
What's the rules?
Okay. It's every time Steven has an unpopular opinion,
take a drink.
No, finish your drink. Because I usually do one.
I need to write these down and post them on the site so people can read it going in. Do we have a pen in the room?
It's on record.
But then I have to go find it. I want to write it down so it's easily accessible.
Well, it's at the end of the episode.
Well, who knows when that's going to be?
To be fair.
Yeah. So, Steven has an unpopular opinion.
Finish your drink.
What's up?
Finish your drink.
Okay. Wait, where do I need a paper? Is that paper?
No. What?
I have paper. That's tissue paper. That's a napkin.
Oh.
I have paper with me.
It's paper towel. It can withstand.
Metal Gear Solid, take a drink. Metal Gear Solid gets brought up. Take a drink.
Shit.
Any Metal Gear Solid game. Take a drink. La La Lule Lo, finish your drink.
Wait, I thought I really had paper with me.
Where was the
notepad I had earlier?
See, this is bad. Like this, I've gotten to the point of drunkenness where I can't remember exactly the point that I've been arguing this entire time.
You hold yourself in circles, man.
This is the advantage of having a very good liquor tolerance. Is
or
that
or
I can
just
keep
fighting
going.
Or fighting to stay sober? Okay, all right. So, I got a piece of paper here. I gotta make a note.
I'm willing to say that this is my greatest contribution to Nerd Funnel is the Nerd Funnel drinking game.
Nerd Funnel drinking game. The future, like...
Your pen died on me. Oh, wait, no, it didn't. Okay.
The future, like, liver damage of all our listeners.
Hopefully. Please drink with us. Please drink with us.
Drink with us.
Okay, Nerd Funnel drinking rules.
The fact is that the show only gets better.
Right. Oh, this is a complete dumpster fire.
It'll make more sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so Metal Gear Solid.
Take a drink.
MGS, take a drink. Okay, Steven's unpopular opinion, take a drink.
By the way.
He says finish a drink. I think you should take a drink.
No, because... I don't have that many unpopular opinions, do I? It's usually one an episode.
Do.
Well, okay, but in all fairness, like, anytime the segment of Steven has an unpopular opinion comes up, finish your drink.
Okay. Fair. Okay. Yeah, I'll play that.
Anytime you disagree with me, take a drink. That'll get them fucked up every episode.
We're not trying to kill people, for God's sake.
Okay, so what else?
Every time.
Oh, hashtag tasty. Anytime Jorge says hashtag tasty.
How often is he going to say that?
All the time.
Fuck.
And if he changes it, we'll just change the rule.
Every time Ivan laments about not having a girl or being single.
Finish your drink.
Ivan laments, finish a drink.
No, now you're trying to kill people.
No, fuck you. It doesn't happen that often. Doesn't happen. Okay, two drinks. Two drinks per show max on that.
Okay.
Every time Bobby brings up Final Fantasy. Okay. Final Fantasy. If Bobby brings up Final Fantasy 9, finish your drink.
Oh, good one. Qualifier.
Fuck.
Oh, anytime Batman or Superman comes up.
Oh, yeah.
Take a drink.
Take a drink.
That's take a drink.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, I think that's enough for now. We'll add to it.
Oh, any dick reference.
Take a drink. Oh, God, that's going to kill people.
Yeah.
No.
You know what that is? You need to stick your fingers down your throat and throw up the drink that you just took.
No.
Yeah. Okay, anytime someone talks about dicks, refill your drink.
Okay. That's a good one. I'll buy that.
What ends up happening is that you end up with a drink to the brim, and then Ivan cries about a girl, and you have to finish it.
Oh, good one.
That's the move. That's the move.
All right. Now we can start tactically applying our drinks.
That's why I put the two-drink minimum.
Right.
But that is a very good strategy.
But then you also have my unpopular opinion.
Steven's an RTS drinker.
But by the way, Steven has an unpopular opinion.
Yeah.
Circle it back around, fucking Shadow of the Colossus. Not that great.
Not that great?
It was okay.
No, you.
It's okay.
Golly. No, take a drink.
Yeah.
Finish your drink.
I get it. I get why people like
what?
It.
What do you get?
I get why people like it.
What? What is it about that this people like? What?
The emotional connection of it. But see, like exactly what you talked about the romance of it, I didn't feel connected to why I was going and doing these horrendous things.
I didn't even know they were you knew they were like bad.
You didn't know necessarily.
But as you got more into the game, you kind of started feeling like he started suffering and looking terrible, and you're like,
who?
These things, the carrot Wander.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you notice he started like looking like
you shit? Know, I never played it. I always watched my friend play it.
No, he ends up looking kind of haggard.
He gets sick
and like,
looks
yeah.
more sickly.
Really?
And then you know the loss that I felt the most? Like the horse. Like I didn't fucking like care much about the woman, but the horse.
But see, like,
that's
the most immediate relationship that you have.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that is very disconnecting about the whole thing to me, and why I'm like, yeah, like, it's fine. Like, but I didn't share a love of that game the way everybody else does.
I like it. I enjoy it. I mean, it's not my super favorite game, but I understand why people like it. Well, but, like, fucking aggro, like, the killer thing about that game, the most killer thing to me is, like, you kind of get by the time aggro sacrifices spoilers.
Yeah.
By the time aggro sacrifices himself to save you to get you to your place that you need to go to, you're already kind of aware that you're doing some fucked up shit.
Right.
So he loves you enough and cares about you enough to sacrifice himself to do something that you know is probably not very good.
By the way, in Metal Gear Solid 5, the horse is way less interesting than in Shadow of Colossus.
The horse, you know, listen, once you get other companions, you forget about
no, you know
horse.
What?
Once you get quiet, then who cares? About anybody
I'm
going
to take a second
to
talk about
cool.
Metal Gear Solid 5.
D-Dog's great.
He's pretty
good. D-Dog's fine. He's fine. He's fine.
Don't you fucking dare. D-Dog is the most fucking loyal of all your companions.
I've got quiet now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to the realization that I don't really enjoy...
By the way, this is three drinks in, by the way.
I don't enjoy Metal Gear Solid 5. I find myself... No, but here's the compliment to it, is I can't stop playing Metal Gear Solid 5. I don't enjoy it.
It's
an abusive relationship.
It's an abusive relationship.
Yeah. I don't enjoy playing Metal Gear Solid 5, but I am still playing it, which I don't know what that says about me. And I feel like I feel like that's almost more the point of the game.
Do you know why you're not stopped playing it?
Exactly. I don't know why.
Is it gameplay?
Because it's the phantom pain. If you were to like cut it out, you would miss it.
Right. Oh. That's what it feels like a little bit.
Wow. Good one, Evan.
And that is the most articulate way to put it. Because if I open up my Steam, I look at the screen and I'm like, what can I just play for like 15, 20 minutes? And it's like, well, I can play a good game like XCOM, or I can play this piece of shit that I don't give a shit about, that is ridiculous. Okay, I'll just play the piece of shit just because I want to get something done.
Oh, so it's accessibility. It's the mission size.
Yeah, it's the fact that it's just a bullshit game. And it's, I mean,
you can do something. You can go into the game, play a mission, and there's nothing really attached to you, no consequence that you have to attach yourself to.
There have been times where, like, because there are missions that you send your little combat squad out on.
Yeah.
And because the game is fucking stupid, it doesn't progress while you're away from the game.
Yeah.
So what I've started doing is, like, if I'm just bored, I'll just do something else and leave that game open and let my squad go do shit for me and just fucking hang out. And, like, just Snake just hangs out at the base. He just is kicking it on the platform or taking a lot of showers. Yeah. Like, whatever the fuck that guy does.
Collecting Pause posters.
No, that takes too much effort. Like, it is the worst game in the best way, I guess, or the best game in the worst way. Like, best I don't really know how to describe it because I can't stop playing it.
Can we just, like, take a moment to applaud the fact that Hideo Kojima is, like, the best worst director or the worst best director? He has perfected perfection in mediocrity. Like, he is the best average.
He succeeded his way to the middle.
He's the best. He's the best at being adequate.
Yes. It's like,
but is it even adequate? Like, I would argue that Metal Gear Solid is not an adequate game in many ways.
At the same time,
I cannot escape it. Yeah.
So, like, the law of averages pushes, like, that, like, negative into the positive and the positive into the negative.
So it all balances
like the
out.
Ultimate average.
Well, and what fucks me up is I have great games in my Steam account right now that I still need to work on, and I can't get away from this fucking game. Like, I have Invisible Ink, which is an amazing game. I have Hard West, which is a super fun game. I have XCOM, which I can keep grinding through, and I cannot get away from this dog shit game. Like, it hurts me in so many ways.
It's haunting. It's a haunting game.
Yeah. It's the Phantom Pain.
It sticks with you. Man.
It's the most meta game that he's ever really produced. Meta.
In a lot of ways, it's so soul crushing to me too. That, like, it hurts me, like, in a mental and almost physical way that I cannot, like, I am not, like, I find myself reciting almost Metal Gear dialogue of, like, I want to fall to my knees in the snow and just go, I'm not strong enough. I cannot break you. Tell me, what does it take to be a strong man, Snake? Like, that feels like it should be dialogue in those games.
Oh, man.
Shit.
Tell me, Snake, what does it take to be a strong man, to do what must be done?
Oh, God.
Oh, my God, I've just written Metal Gear Solid dialogue.
You just started Metal Gear 6. Metal Gear 6 will be, like, the process of getting over Metal Gear.
Metal Gear 6 should just...
So going by your guys' definition, Metal Gear Solid counts as literature.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's a script. There's a game script. A lot of times game scripts are way longer than
I'm done. Fine, you
okay,
win.
Let's just...
You win.
Yay,
is
we won.
Is it not literature, though?
Huh?
Is, if you read the script for the original Metal Gear Solid, how brilliant the writing is in that game. Would you...
Brilliant?
It's a brilliant game. That
brilliant writing?
I will say that completely without irony. There is brilliant writing in that game.
There is brilliance in it. I would not call it brilliant.
But even flashes are brilliant. If we can touch the hem of brilliance, that makes it brilliant.
Or what about
I couldn't write that game.
Or what about like Bioshock? Bioshock, a brilliantly written game.
Yeah.
You could say that Star Wars, the prequels, have... touches of brilliance.
No, they don't. There's no touch of brilliance.
I would disagree. Let's bring it back around to the end for romance.
Baz Luhrmann.
I
love you.
and I love you.
So those movies kind of wrecked my life.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet destroyed?
And Moulin Rouge. Like,
just Moulin Rouge.
Put my head in the clouds. And when I was a kid, I saw it. I was like in middle school, high school.
No.
Yeah.
We were older than that.
No. 2001 was my high school.
That was 2003.
No, Moulin Rouge 2001. I saw it junior year. It came out. And then
fucking Bobby was standing on street corners. Voulez-vous que j'aille avec moi?
You're so old.
Shut up.
He's class of 2001. I'm 2002.
I'm 2004. Nope. And I'm kind of old. Oh. I'm not old.
We're not. It's fuck just you. State of mind.
Fuck you, geezers.
So I guess what I'm saying is like movies and like idealism as far as love goes and how dangerous that can be, because we haven't crossed about like the idyllic love and how it burns people. Like Catherine.
Oof.
So like we've talked about how it builds like relationships and romance and games and movies and TV, how messed up they can be going in, but how much that idealization of romance can it's just not real. It messes people up and destroys people, the dangerous side of romance. So
thanks, anime.
I think the non happily ever afters are worth a nod here. Like Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet, and I think Baz Luhrmann's good at
but is it is Romeo and Juliet really a non-happily ever after? It's a tragedy, but in some ways it's kind of
the families reconcile, but the people are dead.
Well, but I mean,
but
again, chaotic good.
Yeah,
like good. The cost of two
justify the means.
The cost of two to reunite. Well, and but stop future
Moulin Rouge, she dies. New spoilers.
Oh fuck! I never watched it.
Oh, and sorry.
Just watch the killers, Mr.
Well, you know
idea.
From right at the beginning she's dead. So
do
you
I?
Know yeah.
Oh, maybe then I've only seen the middle then. the
first lines of the movie are, this is a story about love. The woman I love is dead.
Listen,
that's the first lines of the movie.
I always get caught up by Baz Luhrmann's like propensity to just speed up everything.
No, it starts out real like
the kinetic. He's a very kinetic filmmaker.
Yeah. No. Moulin Rouge is very
kinetic.
You don't
like Baz Luhrmann? Are you not a Baz Luhrmann guy?
I'm not a fan of Baz Luhrmann. Okay. What was one of the
What about
recent?
Good Will Hunting?
That was Baz Luhrmann.
No,
that was
Great Gatsby.
No, what was
he
no.
did he did Great Gatsby, the new one.
The new one?
With Leonardo DiCaprio.
You know, and that was the least Baz Luhrmann film. And
what are you talking
about?
That
was the one that actually I was like, what's the most recent one?
I was thinking Gus Van Sant.
Oh, okay. No, Baz Luhrmann did the most recent Grace Gatsby with Tobey Maguire.
And it was good.
Leonardo.
Better.
Leonardo.
Because I just have a huge problem whenever he speeds up
you,
footage.
Wait, Great Gatsby was good?
I enjoyed it.
That movie was fucking dog shit. God. I could have eaten the book of the Great Gatsby and shit out a better movie than that.
Great Gatsby has never translated well to screen. I don't think it's a very good.
The Robert Redford movie wasn't great either.
It was no, it was
no,
not.
No,
and
no, it was
the
not.
Reason is, I think the main.
The reason is the source material is bullshit.
Well, the main material is not. I mean, the writing.
It's not relatable.
The actual language is what is the art, I think, of that book more than the actual story itself.
Literature.
I
would disagree that that's even literature, because it's not fun to read. It's not enjoyable in any
way. Well, neither
way.
Is War and Peace, but fucking.
To be fair,
literature.
It's a lot more fun to read than fucking Hemingway ever was.
Hemingway is depressing.
Hemingway. By the way, I just wanted to throw out there, I don't read a lot, but I've discovered a love for reading through A Farewell to Arms, and that was a slog.
That's rough.
That was a fucking slog.
So you're definitely trekking in that
And I would argue Great Gatsby was more fun to read than that.
I will agree with that
one. In all fairness, the last time I read Great Gatsby, I was a punk teenager. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't relate to the material, or it just wasn't as fun to like interact with. But it's one of those pieces of literature that never.
It's again the dangers of idealized romance, idealized love. Like these people, they don't remember what their real situation is. They get these idealic
and
pictures.
I think that's why so many. Well, we read it in high school, but I think why a lot of people kind of like attach themselves to it.
Because they can place themselves in that moment.
No, it's because it's an unreal and idealistic view of love until you hit the very end when you realize that people are fucking
Maybe it's like some sort of therapy. Like, you know, we read these things because, you know, like, we've been there. Like, we've all been in that spot.
Fickle.
Where
fickle is the word.
We've been in the places a lot of us where we do idealize. We don't see what's really going on. I mean, that's one of the things about love and romance, is that you, a lot of times, they say love is blind, right? You love anybody, right? Or it doesn't matter who you love, but also love blinds you. Yeah. Love blinds you. Like, a lot of times you don't see stuff that's wrong.
Well, the best example of that in the movie medium to me, and it's, to me, an absolute masterwork, is 500 Days of Summer.
Oh.
That is an absolute masterwork. Because
cheers.
I didn't see that one.
It captures the birth, middle, and death of a relationship perfectly. Hmm. Like,
One that is destined to fail.
Right. But at the beginning, he can't see it because he's so in love with this
woman. And in the middle and the end, he still can't see it.
Because it's one of those things where, like, everybody who's been through any type of, like, bad relationship, or what they felt like was a bad relationship, can only see it in hindsight.
Bravo. Mm-hmm. Bravo.
And it's so brilliant the way that's
structured. So is it all from hindsight? Like, he's looking back on it?
The thing is that
you're in the middle of it. You get the benefit of hindsight by being living outside of it.
Roughly, it goes like, you start with, like, day one, and then it jumps to day, like, 500. And then it's like, it kind of is back and forth. So you kind of know where the story is going.
You kind of have to piece it together. Yeah.
But it's a matter of, like, how it gets there.
Bravo.
And then by the end of it, and you see the whole picture, you're like, holy shit, I've had this relationship before.
Bravo.
And it's so
brilliant. Who's in it?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt and
J.G.L.
Zooey Deschanel.
Oh, wow.
Who, like, she plays a very, like, almost a very real version of who you imagine as Zooey Deschanel. Because she's very quirky,
mm-hmm.
but then at the same time, there is, like, a sadness or, like, a disconnectedness.
And it's weird because it's still the most ideal version of every person you've dated.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
She stands in. It's like a glove. She just fits that role so well.
She's just... because she plays cute, quirky, and like an animal in some ways.
All the best parts that you remember about a relationship.
Yeah.
Okay.
But not necessarily the worst parts.
But
that
then,
you
but
don't
then
remember
when you when the movie in itself reflects about, like, the issues that she has. You see it. You see, like, why it didn't work, because it captures these weird little moments of, like. He's, like, very affectionate in one moment. And then she just kind of turns away, just very subtly turns her shoulder at him. And you're just like, oh, that was, like, a moment. And you just don't catch it, because in the moment of the movie, you're like, oh, they're in love. Mm-hmm. But then, like, when it goes and shows that moment again in a different context, you're like, oh, like, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah, I see.
Drink up, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm just remembering why I'm single.
Yeah, well, because you are the Joseph Gordon-Levitt of that movie.
No,
you totally are.
Fuck
you. You are in love with the idea of love.
I am.
More than you are any other version of it.
I'm glad Jorge's not here to make fun of me about that, because I used to be that way very hardcore. Yeah.
Are you not still?
Not really, not anymore.
Are you?
He's coming around my way of, like,
I got sour, man. Yeah. I just got broken too many times. I tried.
This is actually segueing into, I think we should premiere the idea of our Nerd Love podcast.
A Nerd Love podcast, yeah. Because there's still, you know, Kotaku has Dr. Yeah. Nerd Love, but that's not...
But a nerdy not dating totally not advice show thing. That we are going to launch hopefully pretty soon.
Hope so, yeah. I want to see that. Let's get that going. The cast or show or both?
I wanted to... The idea would be do a cast and then every so often do a video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've all had very unique endeavors and experiences in love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're
ain't
not.
Ain't that the truth?
We're not.
We ain't no pick of the pokes here.
We're not an island, if you will.
No nerd funneler is an island.
I would argue for a long time I was an island. I was very much like, I liked the idea of being single. I was very
but
much that dude.
Were you an island?
Yeah, like,
I mean, sailors would just come on and
take
port.
Okay, you're talking about a dude who at one point broke up with a chick who was very into him because her big toe looked very flat. That was the impetus behind why
that's gonna be the first episode of
I'll tell that story.
I feel like there's more behind that, and we will
we'll
explore
get
we'll
into
explore
that. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for bearing your hearts
and souls
tonight
with us.
And until next time, you've been
Happy Valentine's.
Happy belated Valentine's to you all, and you've been nerd funneled.